Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Well, Amazon made headlines Tuesday when it became the second American company after Apple to reach $1 trillion in value. Amazon's founder and chief executive, Jeff Bezos, is the richest man in the world with a net worth of more than $167 billion. But what's behind that wealth? What about its workers?
The working conditions in Amazon's warehouses have been the focus of protests, union drives, several investigations, including by student reporters. Well, as students go back to school around the country, Juan, we're going to go to a report by a group of your students at Rutgers University. Juan Gonzalez, Democracy Now! Co-host, is also a professor at Rutgers University in New Jersey. Can you introduce this?
Yeah, well, this is a group of my students in my investigative reporting class who did both a written and a video report on Amazon, because there are now about 10 warehouses just in the state of New Jersey with about that 15,000 workers that are employed by Amazon. This is Kristen Charlery of the Rutgers Student I Team.
Millions of Americans every day ship and receive packages from Amazon. In fact, the company just announced that it has exceeded more than 100 million Prime members, more than the population of Germany.
Amazon is one of the fastest growing companies in the U.S. In the Garden State alone, they employ 15,000 workers with 10 warehouses.
Amazon prides itself on being fast, reliable, and convenient. But when shopping online, we oftentimes only see the end result of what we purchase. But what about the process to get the delivery to you? What goes on inside the fulfillment centers? What is the plight of the average Amazon worker? According to past and current employees, it's not an easy job.
An investigation of Amazon operations by Rutgers student team found numerous cases in recent years of workers being injured and even killed at the company's fulfillment centers because of poor safety conditions, and fines levied against the company or its subcontractors by federal inspectors for safety violations. Beginning in 2013 and ending in 2017, 7 workers died in Amazon warehouses. The deaths prompted the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health to place Amazon on their Dirty Dozen list for 2018. This list is comprised of employers that put workers at risk due to unsafe practices.
My name is Philip J. Pellegrino. I'm 68 years old.
Hi, I'm Ada Bradley. I'm 20.
I work at Amazon's Cranberry Fulfillment Center. On January 31st of 2018, I was working in the 300 aisles counting, and I lifted up a very heavy, awkward package, which turned out to be a trailer tow package for a passenger vehicle. And as I lifted it out of the bin, I heard something snap in my left arm. Okay, felt a lot of pain, and realized that I sustained an injury. January 31st was a Wednesday. It was the last day of my work week. When I came back the following week, I filed a workers' comp claim. And the claim was, after about 10 days, denied by a company called Sedgwick, which is Amazon's insurance company for workers' compensation. I was never given an explanation as to why it was denied. I requested it. They told me, for various reasons. I said specifically, what reasons? Okay, and they said, we can't tell you that. And they never gave me a medical examination to determine the extent of my injury but deny my claim.
It was weird because it was my first day like on the job, and we were walking around, and this one boy, he was like, "Don't work here. This is basically slavery." And I think it's just because it was really like hard work to do. So people, I mean, we were getting paid, so they were just like, "Oh yeah, this is like basically slavery."
If they were to enforce rigidly their safety regulations in those aisles, it would have a detrimental impact on operational efficiency.
We asked Lou Kimmel of the New Labor Worker Advocacy Group why federal health and agencies don't do more to protect workers.
My name is Lou Kimmel. I'm the executive director of New Labor, also co-founder of the organization. OSHA is chronically underfunded. Companies don't want to have unionized workforce because it means paying more money and more benefits in their minds, right? So their justification is always to keep things the way they are. And they have the economic wherewithal to do that pretty effectively. At the same time, compared to other warehouses, they do pay more and offer a little bit better benefit package. So there's that disincentive. People might feel more comfortable with what they're making because of that situation.
Amazon declined to respond to our questions, but the company has said previously of deaths at the facility, "Safety is our number one priority. As we do with any incident, we are reviewing our practices and protocols to ensure the well-being of our employees."
They say that safety is first. Not the case. What's first is get that product to the customer. And if you don't, there's the parking lot. Get in your car and leave.
So the next time you click and order something online on Amazon, think of the hidden workers that make that all possible.
Reporting for the Rutgers I-Team,
I'm Kristen Shallery.
So that was a report by my students at the Rutgers Department of Journalism and Media Studies. There were five of them on this particular team. They had actually a much bigger, longer written report, which we'll link to online. But it's Kristen Shallery, Dan Israel, Kira Herzog, Manya Goldstein, and Rosa Haliva.
And just as we watch that report, independent Senator Bernie Sanders has targeted Amazon for its role in widening the wage gap in the United States. Senator Sanders spoke Monday at an AFL-CIO Labor Day breakfast and called out Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos by name.
"I am not comfortable when one person, wealthiest guy in the world, Jeff Bezos, is today seeing his wealth increase today. $250 million every single day, but there are thousands of workers who are employed by him who are earning wages so low they are on food stamps, Medicaid, and subsidized housing."
Amazon responded to ongoing criticism from Sanders last week in a blog post saying, quote, "Amazon is proud to have created over 130,000 new jobs last year alone. In the U.S., the average hourly wage for a full-time associate in our fulfillment centers, including cash, stock, and incentive bonuses, is over $15 an hour before overtime. We encourage anyone to compare our pay and benefits to other retailers."
This week, Senator Sanders expected to unveil legislation requiring large employers like Amazon to cover the cost of federal assistance received by their workers. For more on working conditions at Amazon, we're going to Britain right now to speak with journalist James Bloodworth, who spent a month working undercover as a picker in an Amazon order fulfillment center and found workers were urinating in bottles because they were discouraged from taking bathroom breaks. His new book is Hired, 6 months Undercover in Low-Wage Britain. Welcome to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us, James. Lay out what you found about Amazon. You've been tweeting nonstop about it hitting $1 trillion. Its CEO, its founding head, Jeff Bezos, the richest man in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I've been tweeting about it and doing things like this in the media because it's really important, I think, to recognize what that huge wealth that Jeff Bezos and Amazon have accumulated, what that's built on. So before I went in 2016, I went into an Amazon warehouse here in Britain. And before that, I mean, I used Amazon myself. It was kind of a first place I'd go to buy books or DVDs, say. I didn't really know much about what goes on in the warehouses. I kind of, like other people, I mean, I wouldn't say I idolized Jeff Bezos, but he was someone in the culture who was, you know, you had some respect for because he'd set up this organization that so many of us used. And while I went into the warehouse in 2016, it was, I mean, I was really, really shocked by some of the things I saw there. I've worked in warehouses before this. It's not as if I was afraid of hard work or as if this was, I'd never been in a kind of warehouse environment. But the atmosphere of the Amazon warehouse I worked in was what I imagine the atmosphere of a low security prison would feel like. So, and again, that this isn't an exaggeration. So, for example, we had to be drug and alcohol tested before we started work, which I'd never had to have that done before. We had to pass in and out of giant airport style security gates every time we even went to the toilet during the day. If you took a day off sick, you were given a disciplinary for that. And if you received six of these disciplinaries, you would effectively lose your job. And this was taking a day off sick, even if you had a letter from the doctor, even if you phoned in beforehand to say that you were going to be sick. So if you took 6 days off sick, you would effectively lose your job. And this was the biggest employer in this town. Other things, I mean, people were afraid. People were receiving disciplinaries for taking toilet breaks. The productivity targets were so high that workers were afraid to go to the bathroom. I mean, a survey came out of the Amazon warehouse I worked in recently, which found that 74% of workers there, order pickers, were afraid to use the bathrooms because of the productivity targets. And this culminated in James Bloodworth. One day I found a bottle of urine on the shelf.
James Bloodworth, on the productivity issue, the students in my class reported from their interviews that pickers were required to pick 300 items per hour from the various shelves in these huge warehouses. That comes to about 12, one item every 12 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, it was astonishing. So, I mean, the first week I was working there, I was an Amazon supervisor came around to find me and told me that I was in the bottom 10% of productivity. And I'm someone who's relatively healthy. You know, I run, I go to the gym. I'm still fairly reasonably young. But someone like me was you know, at the bottom of the productivity pecking order. So imagine what it's like if you're older, if you're overweight at all, if you have a disability. It was just impossible to keep up with the targets. And so what happened was people were running around this huge warehouse, which is dangerous for a start. And then you also received a disciplinary for running. So to hit your targets, if you didn't hit your targets, you'd receive a disciplinary. But to hit your targets, you had to break the rules by running around, for which you'd receive another disciplinary. So what happened was you have this huge turnover of staff. No one's hanging on to their jobs because people are just being fired for anything. And people are also leaving then before their full kind of employment rights kick in. So this is agency staff. We're all agency staff. And this turnover of staff, it's almost as if, you know, you can't prove it, but it's almost as if it's intentional. There's this, they try to get rid of you quite quickly because then they can bring more people in who don't have the same employment rights as a full-time employee.
Very quickly, James, you said you found urine bottles, people afraid to go to the bathroom to take time.
Yeah, so I mean, this has kind of blown up since the book came out, but it was something that I saw when I was working in the Amazon warehouse. So one day, one afternoon, walking around the, you know, the top floor of this huge warehouse, and yeah, I found an empty Coca-Cola bottle with urine in it on the shelf. You know, yellow liquid, smelt it. It's very clear straight away what it is, and you put two and two together, and this has happened because there's a climate of fear, and you're afraid if you go to the toilet, which can take 5-10 minutes, you know, huge warehouse through security, and people are being accused of taking so-called idle time by Amazon for doing this. Everything which takes away from productivity at Amazon is seen as you're doing something wrong.
We have 10 seconds. You have 10 seconds. You said at one warehouse in the UK, Amazon workers called ambulances more than 115 times in 3 years.
Yeah, that was the warehouse I worked in. Yeah. So that says it all, really, in my view.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, September 13th, 2018. So I have been told. This is our weekly caucus on neutralizing workplace racism, exactly some of what you heard in the audio segments that we started with. If we have listeners any non-white listeners in the world, you have a job, self-employed, whatever it is, you have figured out what to do on the job so that that's not you. Urine bottle on the job, I get up and I go to the bathroom whenever I want. In fact, I have a bathroom in my office. If I want to hang out in the bathroom for 2 hours and twiddle my thumbs, that's what I do. I don't know anything about any productivity quotas and got to run around and be scared and do this and do that. I don't know anything about that. You figured out how to get to that point. If you need to take a week off, 5 months off, whatever it is, figured it out. No problems, no issues. If you have to make a phone call, if you have to go get your child for an emergency, no problem. You get all your bonuses, your promotions, raises. Things are looking fantastic until retirement. Whenever you decide that you're ready to, you know, call it a career, you should be like person number one to dial in the number 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. We certainly want any individuals who have figured out some things that work well on the job to help you solve problems. We definitely need to hear from you. But if we have any folks, if you've got problems, anything happening on the job where you would like suggestions for how you can solve problems without creating new problems, definitely dial in and we will do our best to give counter-racist logical feedback on how you can go about solving your problem. With that, if we have folks who've made any adjustments to their counter-racist code, that's always good to hear. Also, if we have any folks where they have a really great illustration of how being codified on the job has been helpful to you specifically, that I think would be great. I think sometimes people struggle with knowing exactly what that is and figuring out exactly what being codified is going to mean to them individually, because we all don't have the same code, and then implementing that, not just thinking it through in your mind, say this, don't say that, do this, don't do that, but actually then carrying that out and then carrying it out consistently. So I think it's always good to get reminders so folks can think of a good illustration. As I was doing my research for the week, oh, and remind folks, Dr. Tommy Curry was here yesterday. If you missed, it's in the archives. iTunes is still, there's some issues. I tried again today and it was not working, but we are archived at Google Play, SoundCloud, YouTube, and of course, Black Talk Radio Network. The archive from yesterday and all of the recent content is in all of those locations and elsewhere. And I posted the links for SoundCloud and Black Talk Radio Network and YouTube, courtesy of Mr. Fox. Posted all of that on Facebook today. I'll post it on Twitter as well. So should be lots of different ways for you to access the cows. That's it. Retired firefighter. I think he was with us yesterday, even though he did not participate in the program. I was doing my diligence for the week, and I saw this article and thought of him immediately. It's in the New York Times. It was posted yesterday. Op-ed, I was a firefighter for 35 years. Racism today is as bad as ever. This is by Addington Stewart, who is a retired St. Louis firefighter. That would be Michael Brown Jr., St. Louis. So the article, it reads, if I can pull, I'm reading the article, but if you read this, I don't know what this article looks like in the actual physical paper. It might be worth it to check either today's paper or yesterday's New York Times to see if this article is in the paper, because they have a massive photograph of a black male holding a noose And the caption reads, an electrician for the New York Fire Department, Gregory Seabrook, second from the left with his lawyers, who mostly appear to be white, at a news conference in 2011. Mr. Seabrook said he found a noose outside his work locker after he complained about quote unquote discrimination, but might be worth it to check out the report just to see if they had that picture with the article. Anyway, the article reads, imagine how you would feel if you showed up at work and found a noose waiting for you. It happened just last year to a young black firefighter in Miami. Are you serious? Woo! In our profession, that garish expression of racism was unfortunately not an anomaly. In the aftermath of California's summer wildfires and the well-deserved praise of the heroism of the people who risked their lives to extinguish them, it's also important to confront the bigotry that puts individual firefighters and the people we serve at risk. I served 35 years as a firefighter, and the racism today is as bad as I can remember. My organization, the International Association of Black Professional Firefighters, is monitoring or pursuing legal or administrative action on a dozen major cases of discrimination. Though the noose incident took place in Florida, this is not just a Southern problem. Right on. Complaints come from liberal bastions, including New York City, where just last year, seven African-American employees of the fire department filed a lawsuit over a broad pattern of racial discrimination. That's in quotes. In Ohio, a volunteer firefighter announced on Facebook that he'd rather save a dog than an African-American. Beyond the obvious implications for citizens who might need help, this statement is representative of the kind of attitude many black firefighters confront at work each day. I believe incidents like those I've described here are underreported. In my experience, repercussions for reporting discrimination or harassment can be as career damaging as the despicable actions that prompted an appeal for justice. Black firefighters who have taken a stand against, I'm going to say incorrect, but he used the F word, incorrect treatment report having been punished with increased harassment, social exclusion, reduced pay, transfers, and demotions. Despite a rich history of black firefighting heroes that goes back to the beginnings of a professionalized service in the early 19th century, firefighting in this country is stained by a tradition of exclusion. Post-segregation, discrimination was reinforced through deep-rooted nepotism and cronyism. For those whose great-grandfather, grandfather, and father weren't firefighters, and especially for applicants with the wrong color, gender, or sexuality, training and testing became an impermeable barrier. I want to pause right there. This is one of those where the conflation, in my view, it is abhorrible. It is totally unacceptable. Sexuality, really? Like, I have no idea the number of gay firefighters, and I don't think anybody would have a way of ascertaining that information to say that black people have been subjected to the same type of mistreatment by fire departments consistently. That is absurd. It's totally incorrect. It's ahistorical, and I don't think that there's any evidence that would support that in any way that is accurate, and we can get retired firefighter to make sure that I'm not being dishonest. Continuing, notoriously white male recruits received special mentoring and reduced scrutiny by those in charge of hiring. So-called bad apples can't be blamed for all the racial problems in the fire department today. The problems are system deep. To begin to solve them, local fire department leaders must step up their efforts to support and enforce inclusivity. We should prioritize hiring fire chiefs who are fully committed to dismantling nepotism and tackling those professional traditions that degrade opportunity. We need an impartial, standardized, and professional process for testing at entry level and on promotional exams to inoculate against the effects of bias and favoritism. Fire departments must enforce workplace rules already in place. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, fewer than 8% of our nation's firefighters are African Americans, and an even smaller percentage hold leadership positions. In that way, our nation's fire service is like many other industries that are still battling hate and bias, both subtle and in your face. What makes firefighting unusual is that we're rolling out of a firehouse with sirens on, whether responding to a fire, drug overdose, whites and their so-called heroin epidemic, or car crash. We know that what we encounter may be the worst moment in someone's life. Our hearts are pounding, and we're aware that any call could be a one-way trip for us. Smoke inhalation, building collapse, and backdraft are known risks, and we accept them. But the hazards of bigotry within our ranks are an unacceptable burden. When we step into a life-threatening situation, we need to work as a team and know each one of us has the other's back. Woo! Pause for the new American classic. That's what it is. The Hate You Give. Woo! Finishing up the last sentence. Unchecked hate and discrimination obliterate that essential trust. They put us in greater danger, and they can put you in greater danger, too. That is the article. It's in the New York Times. Again, I guess if we have listeners who, if you're close enough, if you have a physical copy of the New York Times, it would be great to see if the photo of the noose is in the like paper copy of this report. I'll share it so that you can read it. But I thought this was really great. Be great to hear retired firefighters' thoughts on this article. Just words are very important. Bigotry. That is not a word we should use. I definitely discourage the use of the term bigotry, discrimination. I would definitely discourage. In fact, my recommendation would be to totally eliminate that word. Even if it's a workplace context, I would not use that term, that bigotry is being practiced against me. I found a noose in my locker, or discrimination. Hate, that was another one, that hate is being not at all. Particularly if it's a noose, it's going to be terrorism. That's the word. We've talked about this before, the use of terms. Subversion, very important in terms of how we talk about what's happening. It's not hatred. It's not bigotry. Racism, white supremacy. And even though they use racism in the title, going down to the conclusion, the word racism wasn't even being used. But be that as it may, very important. That's just one specific aspect. There's a reason why we have so many different reports from the fire department on a weekly basis on the cows. Really quickly, forgive me for not beginning with this. Got caught up in the excitement of the program starting. Even though I am thousands of miles away, I was born in the state of Virginia. I am very aware of the storm situation on the East Coast. Thoughts, concerns for folks in the Carolinas and the great state of Virginia. Take the warnings seriously. Remember Katrina, the levee failure, and the fact that white terrorists, not white bigots, white terrorists, flocked to Louisiana not to save drowning looters and refugees, but they came for the opportunity to shoot and kill black people. And that is not Gus T. ranting. That is A.C. Thompson, ProPublica, white terrorism, Hurricane Katrina. He was a guest on the program. He has a report published in The Nation. It's also available online. That documentary, Law and Disorder, the police were involved in some of this. Very important, but keep all of that in mind, folks in the great state of VA and the Carolinas. Take those warnings seriously. White people are especially dangerous when you have chaos, things break down in that nature. I am sure even after the hurricane and all that, you'd still have a lot of armed whites, armed race soldiers, badge or no, in that area. Just be mindful of that. But thoughts, concerns for folks in those areas. Before I get to the callers, that segment on Amazon that we heard at the beginning, I know some of our listeners have said that they worked in the Amazon department, and that report immediately brought to mind some of the things that, because they sound, if you're listening, any of our listeners who work with Amazon, if that the report that we heard from Democracy Now, if you can corroborate, that would be grand, because I was thinking of exactly some of you all when I heard that were watched that report, and they were talking about those conditions, and particularly thinking that Amazon is probably getting a lot of black people, a lot of non-white people in those jobs, and thinking, oh yeah, I'm coming up, doing a little bit better for myself, and then bang, you get stuck in that sort of situation. High turnover rate. It's not like you're going to be there to build a career. You're not making a lot of money, and then if it's to the point where you can't go to the bathroom, I know that can end up causing health problems. That's how you end up with urinary tract infections and that sort of thing. I've heard that. I've been on jobs where you are discouraged from going to the bathroom, and that is exactly what happened to coworkers and what have you. And what did the doctor say? Get another job. We will get to people wrote in. I'll read as we go. The email, if you're not able to call, is untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. If you're not able to call, you can drop an email and we can read your commentary live on the air. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. First few folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, line should be open. Feel free.
Can I be heard?
Thomas in New York. Good evening.
Good evening. I figured I'll get the ball rolling. It's not Saturday, so I can see that. Good to hear from you, Gus, as always, and all the callers. I can't wait to hear what you got to say. I hate that word, hate. Like when they say hate speech. I never saw a white person get arrested for calling a person a nigger or a chink or a spick or a swami or whatever other word they created to degrade and practice racism against people. But I have seen black people get arrested for talking about Jews. I've seen that in live person. So it's a system of white supremacy, of course. And of course, Jews are white people. Firefighter. I saw a report, of course, in New York. It's a big deal every year. September 11th, a day that will live for infamy in firefighter history. I think 340 or so died in that fire. However, they said they allocated 16,000 firefighters to what they call Ground Zero, which is today called the World Trade Center again. And 12,000 have gotten sick due to lung-related diseases or things. That they, of the 16,000, 12,000 have gotten sick, and 2,000 have died. And I thought that was very interesting. And, of course, when they say firefighters in New York, they're talking about the firefighters. The firefighters have their own EMS squad that usually services the underprivileged areas. And the civilian firefighters as well. So 12,000 are sick, and 2,000 have died. So not a good number. My workplace racism, and I anything white people do is racism to me because they have power. I worked at this job since January, the day after Martin Luther King's birthday. And all this time, you know, I assume that everything is going smooth. I don't get an actual pay stub. Everything gets direct deposited. And I do my own hours, you know, use the calculator pretty much. Every time I get paid, it seems like it's pretty much in line with what I think. And I get my overtime sheet, so I see that, you know, when it gets boosted up or whatever. However, they call me into the office yesterday, and they say they have not taken any health insurance out of my check since I started there. However, I've been getting the health insurance, and she apologized. She said this was her error. such a big mistake. She's so sorry. So their remedy is to take all this money back from me over the next few months until January, when they could pay it off. So not only will I now be having the now be paying the health insurance that I was supposed to be paying, which I have no problem, they're going to take over $300 from me this pay period for this health insurance that I thought was being paid all this time. And the lady, I was so pissed off, and she could see it. You know, I was, it's, I mean, she called me back 3-4 times to apologize. And then the last time she called me back, and this has happened before, she tells me, this is the busy season. This is tax season for corporations. Up until October 15th, it'll be very busy. She says, so you'll be able to get a lot of overtime over the next few months to, you know, make some extra money. Like, you know, now that's what slave wages are paying y'all back, you know. So, and then she says, and this week, you didn't turn your overtime in until today. Now, this was yesterday. I said, no, I didn't. I turned it in on Monday. She says, no, I didn't get it until today. I said, that's impossible. So she tells me to come look at her computer, and it said, you know, today, that it came Thursday. So I go back to my computer, and I find the email where I sent it to her Monday. And I don't know why that wasn't on her computer, so I resent it to her. And, you know, see, today I expected to hear something from her. No. Crickets. You know, hi, Thomas, and kept walking. So I said, man, also today at work, during this busy season, we get free lunch every day, which is usually served in a buffet style. They order from a place. The black receptionist, the person being classified as black, is the active receptionist. She sets up the conference room with the food and everything, and people go in and eat their lunch around 12 o'clock. And each day they order from a different restaurant. So one day it'll be Indian food, the next day Chinese food, and, you know, every Friday is pizza, you know, different places all the time, either way. So she set everything up today, and she was sitting down eating her lunch. And as she's eating her lunch, the French lady that I've been talking about, who we at work call Bonjour, that's our little nickname for her. Here comes Bonjour, you know, so everyone knows she's coming. No one likes her. Everyone feels like she got to go. Either way, she's telling this lady who's the receptionist that she checked her email, and she says, I'll check it after I eat my lunch. Thank you. So she says, no, let's just go over it real quick now. And she says, no, I'm eating my lunch. Please step away from me. And this white lady persisted, and she was very clear that she was eating her lunch. Get the heck away from me. So she had to raise her voice a little, and of course everyone looked. And, you know, she pretty much, you know, when a black woman enunciates every syllable of a word, you know, if you don't, you know, like, it was really, you know, in that white, oh my gosh, and she walks away, played victim. And, you know, I just thought that was her practicing racism, white supremacy, as they all do. And I mute myself. Thank you, guys.
I love it. I think I said last week, I think that's black self-respect. All of us doing all that we can to preserve, protect from a weak position, our personal space, personal boundary. You said it was black females trying to eat, and the suspected race soldier go, oh, we can do it right now. Come on. It's, you know, forget that you're trying to eat and all that. Like, let's do it right now. Let's do it right now. I'm ignoring, you know, what you request that you've made. I suspect you all are supposed to get a lunch hour to say, no, if I have to raise my voice, if I have to stop, no, I'm eating. And we can do this. You can give me whatever I'm supposed to have. It's 20 minutes, 15, whatever it is. And then we can come back. Just being very clear about that. If I have to speak up a little bit, if I have to be stern about this, whatever it takes. But do not, you know, allow these race soldiers to bully you. And then the victim thing, to not be surprised about that even. And even to be prepared. Do I not get a lunch break? Am I supposed to desist if I'm, you know, eating my lunch? Designated lunchtime, am I supposed to desist with that activity to check an email? Is that the policy? Matter of fact, what does the policy say about lunch break? Policy and procedure. Other folks that we've not much obliged, Thomas in New York. Other folks that we've not heard from at all. Those shenanigans with the pay that is, man, beyond furious. Another thing to not be surprised about either, anytime the shenanigans with pay and it's to your detriment, always suspected as deliberate act of racism. Other folks that we missed, that we've not heard from, if you have commentary.
Can I be heard?
Retired firefighter. Was I making that up, this specific sentence where they said that black people, where they said people of color, non-white people have faced the same types of barriers as folks, gender, that was the way it was, gender, sexuality, and all the rest. Is that accurate to your understanding, the time that you worked on the fire department?
No, sir. If you're speaking about black people being mistreated, quote unquote, second place is not even close. Black people being mistreated by far is the number one issue as far as in the mistreatment column is concerned. Did I answer your question?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was just listening to Thomas, and I didn't personally experience what he was talking about in terms of his job taking money out of his check, but I've heard it a lot, and it becomes a reminder of who has the power. When you make a mistake, I'm going to punish you, maybe even to the point of terminating you. But if I make a mistake, I'm still going to punish you. It's normally the unwritten rule that I see in employment under the global system of racism and white supremacy, especially. There is nothing that you report on the fire department that I'm not surprised by when it comes to racism and white supremacy, from its very origins. It's been that type of behavior and atmosphere. That's been the atmosphere. Primarily, it is a male-dominated environment, but nevertheless, even with white females on the job, they also join right in with their male compadres on practicing racism and white supremacy. And they get assisted by their white male coworkers at the same time. Although they may complain, you know, about something in the terms of gender, it's very minute compared to the practice of racist white supremacy in all different forms. They would use that thing with the noose as a quote unquote joke to get along. That sort of thing. They would use that type as an excuse. Unfortunately, a lot of times it is rendered that type of an excuse. That's probably has a lot to do with how I answer questions or express my opinion, because that's what I had to do to get through 28 and a half years. At least that's the way I felt anyway, that I had to do. And, as you can hear, I'm here. Well, nobody on the program knew anything about me until I was already retired. So, that's basically, you know, everybody based on everybody's experience is probably, rates on how they, work on their job as far as the attitude when it's being codified against the system of racism. Anything else on that story? I came on part of it.
Let's see. You got, that was the big one, to make sure about the hiring, the noose. Did you, he mentioned a noose incident specifically in Miami in 2011. And I think he, let me see if I give the name, if you know about this.
Well, go ahead. If you go.
Oh, okay. This is the one that we talked about, where it was a big group of firefighters. We talked about this one on the program.
Right. That was reasonably recent. That was maybe a year and a half now, 2 years ago.
Right.
Because the first thing came to my mind when you were describing it, I said, wait a minute, I'm not surprised, because for the most part, things like that happen on the fire department so often, they may not even report it on the news, because I certainly didn't hear it. But if you're talking about an incident that took place about a year or two ago, yeah. Now, one thing about the difference between that incident and the one where the black male had the scrotum on his forehead, the black male who had that, he took the attitude of playing around with the white males. And in turn, eventually that's what took place with him. But this particular victim of racist white supremacy, he was never in on any type of playful behavior with these white males when that took place with him. Which is a lot different as far as, you know, strategy on how to behave on the job, how to be codified on the job. And I don't know what eventually was the outcome on it. A lot of times I hear the stories, but yet at the same time, I don't, haven't heard about the results. Same thing with the two firefighters, one male, one female. Matter of fact, I mentioned the female because she had a lawsuit against Dade County Fire Department because she didn't get promoted, which she deserves to have been promoted. Faye Davis is her name. But I haven't heard anything about it. They're the ones who had on the shirts that said F Trump, F-U-C-K Trump. They had, and they were posing in a picture. I didn't hear anything about the results of that. But as far as I know, they're still working, so, you know.
I see. I remember that case as well. That was even more recent. But
Ryan, yeah, that's real recent. Yeah.
Yeah. Much obliged, retired firefighter. I am going to see if I can reach out to Mr. Addington. I think that's his name, the black male who wrote this report, or at least someone with their organization might be informative to get more details about racism, white supremacy in the fire department. Other folks that we have not heard from at all, if you have a hand up, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am. Codified software developer.
Yes, sir. Good evening, Gus. Good evening to all the callers and listeners. I have an update from work. First off, just as an aside, Mr. Fuller's revised expanded edition, code book, page 131, in a social material system dominated by racists, white supremacists, all quote-unquote jobs that are established and are maintained by white people are dominated either directly or indirectly by those white people who practice racism, white supremacy. No person can be hired, fired, promoted, and or get in trouble on a job unless it is the will of the white supremacist. So Friday, and I think I've been talking about this, how they refused to give me a promotion. Friday, my boss calls me in to my one-on-one meeting and tells me I've gotten a promotion. And so I had a few questions for him. Number one, what are the duties of the job title that I was receiving? And he says, everything that's beyond my current or the job that I had previously. I then asked if he could be specific, because that could include the CEO's duty. And he said, well, you need to have a wide breadth of knowledge of our software, development and mentoring, leadership, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So then I said, well, what is the difference between what I am doing now and what I'm expected to do? And he said, well, part of it is showing the willingness to do these things. And then he throws some white validation in there. I see you as a valued member of our team and this company. So finally, I asked, well, what do you expect to be the constructive result of this promotion? And he said, well, I expect you to feel empowered in your position of, you know, and then he goes on to say, well, the role of an architect can be an analyst, and the role of the analyst can be an architect. And he mentions a white male who he says works as an architect, even though he's an analyst, which is the position I was promoted to. And I know that that white male is now an architect. So I questioned that. And that seems to be in line with a few things that I've heard from white people around my job. I feel like the white people have known that I'm going to get this promotion for a while. They keep on hinting at, well, you know, there are people on the architecture team that aren't architects. So I'm at this point, I'm guessing that they gave me the promotion just so that they can overwork and underpay me by placing me on the architecture position, on the architecture team, where everybody else is getting paid maybe a third or 133% of the salary that I'll be getting with this promotion, and I'll still have to do the same duties. Now, I did ask, will I get paperwork, because he just told me, and he gave me a little slip with a new number on it that was supposed to be my salary, and I said, well, will I get paperwork? He said, well, I don't know, and I said, well, I, you know, basically said paperwork or it didn't happen, and the very next workday, I received paperwork. So they seem to be very serious about this. Just a couple of quick vignettes. Drive-by racism, white female was in the break room, and I came in, and she's one of the developers, and she said, oh, do you have a moment? And I said, yes. And she said, oh, I haven't spoken to you for a while. So sometimes when white people do this, you know, this is one of those white people who rarely speaks to you. And so when white people do this, I'm curious. So I sat down and asked her a few questions about what was going on her team, and we talked about work specifically. And there's this one gentleman, who older black male, who works in facilities maintenance, and he came by. He's always very friendly and very, you know, he's a bit, I don't know how to say, but he's very overly friendly with white folks, joking and laughing and everything. And so he says hi, and I say, hi, Mr., you know, his name. And then he says hi to her, and she says, oh, we spoke already. And then just sort of blew him off. Obligatory Colin Kaepernick vignette. I was walking outside after I received this news about this promotion. White male that I worked with was walking in front of me. And apparently there are memes going around. I don't know. I don't pay attention to social media. But there are memes going around, Nike memes, which seem to have the gist of I don't care or I don't give an F. That sort of came out after this Colin Kaepernick ad came out. And so he showed me one of the memes, and I say, And I guess that wasn't the response that he wanted, because he showed me another meme, and this one was of Jeff Bridges from The Big Lebowski. And I said, you know, that movie is very interesting. I heard a great analysis on that on a podcast. It was just awesome. I think I need to watch that movie again. Didn't show me any more memes. Finally, obligatory Delectable Negro vignette, the non-white, non-black Indian, so-called Indian male. We were in another meeting. Here comes the white architect who has been sexually terrorizing him for a while. There are two empty chairs at the table. The non-white, non-black male is sitting in the back of the room. The white male goes right behind the non-white Indian male and crouches down, and then starts touching him and playing with him, just all this little horseplay. And the non-white Indian male looks extremely uncomfortable. He moves, his body language is very tense. He moves away. I mean, clearly this is a horrible situation for him. Just last but not least, Thomas in New York. I was just wondering if you had electronic pay stubs. You get electronic pay stubs that sort of detail what they've been taking out. You can verify that what the race soldier in HR told you was true. And with that, I'll mute my line. Thank you.
Much obliged, software developer. I think that's phenomenal. I guess it seems like congratulations would still be in order, but kind of a tempered congratulation. You can never be too excited about things on the plantation. But I think that's phenomenal in terms of not, you know, kicking your heels and, you know, it's watermelon day on the plantation. Whoopee, got extra cornbread, like just asking questions. Can we get this in writing and not just on a scrap of hay or whatever you've written this on to make sure this is final? Because racists love to do that, to come in and say, oh, yeah, we're going to do this. And then come in a week. Oh, yeah, we had a snafu and we're going to have to wait a little while or some other nonsense or excuse. They are lovely with that sort of thing. And I think that's the exact sort of temperament that we should all have, that this promotion or whatever they're saying is going to come. They have got something in store for me, if that's working me to death, because now they're giving me this or something, and I'm going to be alert the whole way through. Might be a good habit to inquire about training when you get these promotions as well, to make sure that you're in the best possible position to do well. They seem to enjoy setting a lot of us up for failure. And I think great in trusting your instincts and recognizing that it seemed like they kind of knew what was up about this. Whites, they, you know, network a lot and probably had been talking amongst themselves about you and whatever they're plotting all along. So great job trusting your instincts there. The Big Lebowski in the archives. What can I say? Interesting to note that once you raised the question about the great Jeff Bridges and that historic film, there were no more memes. All I can say about the Indian male and being abused and everything, really, that's why I keep saying, you know, black self-respect about your personal space and boundaries. Really make that clear. Use your words. You can step away. But really make that as clear as you possibly can. Really, I'm not going to be uncomfortable. I already got to be here, and I don't like that. But I am not going to have people molesting my personal space, touching me or anything like that. Male, female, CEO, janitor, I don't care who it is, grabbing at my zipper. We've heard too much of that over the years of doing workplace racism for males and females. Have a code just about what you're going to say and get comfortable saying it. And don't be surprised if something like that happens. Expect it. That's what racism, white supremacy is. Other folks we've not heard from at all. If you have commentary, proceed.
Hi, Gus.
Stacy in the UK, almost, let's see, 2 a.m. Friday morning, UK time. Yes, ma'am.
Oops. Hello to you and the rest of the callers. I'm going to try and be quick. Well, definitely concise. A couple of tacky and trifling updates and experiences for this week. On Monday, there was someone who heads up the BAM, Black and Minority Ethnic Network, who is a male. He's one of the co-chairs. I do get on well with this person. Their network meeting was taking place on the Monday. He had told me the previous week and asked me if I was coming along, and I had no intention of doing so. However, he's normally based in another building. He came over to the building where I was that day because I guess the meeting was taking place in that building. And so he was hot desking, and it so happened that he was hot desking on the floor where I work, a couple of yards away from where I was sitting. So there was no way for me to get out of it without, you know, well, I mean, I guess I could have said no, but I'm trying to not cause conflict or any kind of, you know, ill feeling between me and colleagues. So even though I had no intention of going, it was a bit harder not to, because he directly asked me if I was going to be there and made reference to the fact that I'd been back at work for a couple of months. Now, are my feet settled under the table? To which I said, is it can any of us have our feet settled under the table? And then I thought, oh, I'm getting off cold. So anyway, so it was difficult for me not to go. I sat down, listened to the updates that they were given, and, you know, all the non-white people who are involved in this network, including this non-white male, you know, they're doing everything with the best intentions, I'm sure. And I do have a lot of regard for him. So, you know, I didn't want to get into conflict. Plus, I know why he asked me, because in the beginning I was assisting in getting the network off the ground, or at least activities to improve the position of black non-white staff in the organisation. But that was before they excluded me from the organisation for 10 months, or the senior managers excluded me. So, you know, I had no intention of getting involved. Anyway, so they gave the updates. And it was interesting to observe that, you know, there are a number of non-white people who are part of the network. It was the largest the last time he gave me an update, and it's got even larger since, you know, probably the biggest network. But I think that just reflects that so many non-white people are being mistreated in the organisation. Anyway, it was interesting to observe how management have made sure that they organise themselves, and before they release the money to them, they needed to have an action plan. And I was sat there thinking, why do the non-white staff or any of the networks need to have action plans? They are not senior managers. It's a network. If you have an action plan, that suggests that they're expecting you to deliver outcomes. And it just reminded me of Zora Neale Hurston and what's his name, the other non-white author who eventually got into conflict with her. Oh, I've forgotten her name, Gus. Langston Hughes. And the way, I think it was it grandma or the godmother, gave them some trinkets and used that as a way of controlling them. And, that's what was running through my mind at the time. Because senior management should have an action plan to improve the position of non-white staff. Even if the network have a work program, that's fine. It should be something that everybody comes up with themselves, which may include things like, you know, holding management to account for any mistreatment that non-white people face. But certainly they shouldn't be being controlled in that way. And so for me, you know, there were a number of things that I observed that I just thought, I am not the person to get involved in this charade, because I'm probably going to be that rebel that they upsets everybody, including the non-white staff, because I will end up telling them things that they really don't want to hear. But anyway, so they ran. I was going to say non-white month next month. It's Black History Month in the UK next month, and they're talking about various activities that, you know, they want people to put ideas for. Forward. It's been Black History Month in October for many, many decades. I can't understand, particularly because of the organisation I work for, why everything is being done last minute. But they went for a list of activities, and includes some public-facing activities. But the activities so far on the list for non-white staff include a number of films and getting people to come in and do talks. And these are people who, you know, have written books such as Slay in Your Lane, which are written by two non-white females, you know, VGQ and all the above to them. I haven't read their book, but they're getting a lot of attention. And I just have a feeling there's a lot of, if not anti-blackness, naiveness, which is why suspected racists are giving them lots of attention. But, you know, there's no criticism intended towards these non-white people from my perspective. It's just I find it all very suspect. But one interesting thing on the agenda of activities for staff is an African contemporary dance workshop, which was first introduced as a twerk shop. And I was sat next to the person giving this update, and I thought, I didn't just hear that. And then somebody else or the person sharing at the end said he'd be interested to find out a bit more about this twerk shop. And then, but you know, if it's so the black male who was given that update corrected and said, well, you know, because it's an African contemporary dance and they're just trying to find the appropriate room to have it. And I thought, yeah, you would need to have a very, you'd need to spend some time finding an appropriate room to do that workshop. And I just thought, okay, I can't say anything here and now. I just need to leave this room. And I went home, and the following day I was working from home and it was just on my mind so badly. And I thought, I am going to send an email to senior manager and a couple of other people, including the person sharing the blame network, to ask them if this is a really appropriate thing to put on as the offering for staff, black staff, in the organisation, a twerk shop. Now, I know for a fact that, you know, there's a lot of activity around the gender workshop, sorry, gender membership, which I know is really a structure to support more white females being promoted. I'm sure none of the activities that they've ever put on include stripper-based so-called African contemporary dance activities, but this is the offering. And I just don't even know if anybody else in the room was offended by it, but I certainly was. And I thought, I, you know, and then I calmed down for a bit, or you know, I thought, let me take some time to think about whether I will respond to that. And I'm not going to lie, I was at home and I found myself crying because I didn't even realize I was crying at first, but it was just that bad. And I haven't responded as yet because I need to kind of calm down and decide whether I want to. Sorry, Gus, I can hear some noise. I don't know.
Sorry, I think it was someone's line was open. If you could use your mute button so we don't pick up a lot of unnecessary background noise. Sorry about that, Stacey. We could hear you. It was just the noise in the background. Okay. So you said when you got home and you started crying.
Yeah, so I haven't responded as yet, but I guess it just, I didn't even realise I was crying at first, but it was just, it made me realise this is upsetting me more than I even realised. But I'm taking my time to decide whether or not I want to respond, not least because I'm just trying not to be that nigger in the organisation. Another tacky event, which I'll quickly summarise. For some reason, there's an infestation of flies, which I've noticed for just over a week, just little black flies flying around, which the weather is getting a bit cooler over in the UK. So even though it's still quite warm, it's really odd to see the, you know, the little black fruit flies. And I noticed them around my bag last week, but there was nothing in my bag. But there's always, at every bank of desks on the floor, there's always food, especially the team that I'm in, cakes, biscuits, whatever. So, you know, even though it was really annoying and unusual, at first I didn't put too much attention to it. On Monday, I brought some shopping at lunchtime. I put most of it in the fridge, forgot to put some raspberries in there. I saw about 10 little black flies on the bag that I had, so I quickly closed it up. But, you know, we've had an infestation of mice for about 2 years straight. And I mean, like, the mice were so comfortable. They would be running around the floor during the day, never mind in the evenings. So seeing some flies is really not unusual, even though I work in a very expensive part of the city, and the so-called building that I'm working in has won awards, you know, whatever. Anyway, suspected racist who sits behind me is a particularly trifling individual. He said to me yesterday, oh, have you noticed flies in this area? So I said, oh, yes. And then I explained the raspberry situation that happened on that week. I said, oh, no, I just, because I'm asking, because I was just wondering if you've got anything in your desk or something that would be attracting them. And I'm sure he's already gone through my desk, so he already knows the answer to that. So I said, no, Jason, I don't. But anyway, so I carried on the charade because I'm trying not to be that person. And then as he had gone to lunch, came back and was talking to me about it again or something. And I said, oh, let's see that. And I knew he was accusing me. And he had something that he was eating, and there were more flies. So I said, oh, look, you're attracting flies. Anyway, he went off, did some kind of investigation, came back and said, oh, he's spoken to somebody else on another side of the floor. It turns out that they had been drinking beer the week before up on the floor for some reason, and someone had spilt something and it hadn't been cleared up. So the flies are just breeding in the building. And then he said, okay, so you're off the hook for the, you're off the hook. And obviously I knew he was accusing me. So I said, oh, so was I on the hook then? And then he gave a nervous laugh and walked off. And I just thought to myself, yeah, interesting. And I just noted the metaphor on the hook, which I think can also, you know, sometimes people say string you up, or can also be known as hanging. And I'll mute my line there, Gus, because I've been talking for a while.
Stacey in the UK, context of white supremacy. There is that nutty dude that talks about metaphors quite a bit, especially on the compensatory call-in. Anywho, I say charade. You say charade. I have not heard it pronounced that way. Is that an English thing? Is that the way it's said across the way? Charade? Is that how they say it?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm gonna profile from now on. I'll say it that way. Charade. Wow. Anywho, either way.
It'd be my common accent, but most people say charade. Yeah.
Okay. Well, the tackiness I'm very familiar with, pronunciation aside, particularly for you being accused about the fruit flies. I feel like that's so common. I'm sure there are Black people worldwide who can relate to that. And then when they find out that, especially where you've been accused, or they're even making it sound like you might be culpable for something that has been done incorrect or problem, and then they find out that you have nothing to do with it, and it's still like they come back and they, well, I guess you're off the hook. Like, what are you talking about? Like, the practice of racism, whites, and some subtle things like that I probably would not have paid as much attention to. But it's, you're always, and that's the other thing, when you were saying that you carried on this charade because you didn't want to be that person on the job. And I think with the system of racism, it's kind of like you already are. That's why you're already on the hook. Anything goes wrong, they're fruit fly. Stacey must have, yeah, she must have done something. Incidentally, I don't think it should be minimized. They were drinking beer and spilled something, and that has resulted in the infestation of these vermin, the flies or whatever, contributing to the mice maybe hanging out as well. But drinking beer in the facility, not Stacey doing anything incorrect or any of the Black minority ethnics messing around doing something wacky, beer guzzling whites on the job who probably have not been punished or identified. Other folks who dialed in that we've not heard from, if you have commentary, lines should be open. Proceed.
Gus, can I just quickly ask a question?
Maybe. Please go ahead.
Wonderful. Let's get your question.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know that. Oh, sorry. Thank you to the last caller. I'd be interested to know people's opinion on whether or not I should raise the inappropriateness of the twerk shop for Black History Month.
I'll have to think about that one. I think raising such a question might make you that person. You already are, but I think that would like, what? You have a problem with the twerk? Yeah, we'll see what other folks think. I'll have to think on that some more myself. The caller 9029, thank you for yielding. Did you want to proceed?
Yes. Greeting callers, listeners, and thank you for the platform, Gus. Sorry, Stacey, first off, that you've been dealing with that. To put it in the context, I think white people would hear that and would say, why do you feel offended? Why do you feel, like you're being harassed? But as a non-white male myself, I completely understand working in the office. And, if something goes missing, something goes awry, you're like, you're immediately that person to be pointed at and kind of treated unfairly. You know, no matter what your position is, it doesn't even matter if you're even in a higher role than the people that are accusing you. So I'm sorry you have to deal with that. As far as myself, I've been making some adjustments on the job. I've been networking with other non-white people in the office, mainly classified as Black, and they've been very helpful as far as getting me to navigate into different departments where I could utilize a little bit more of my skills and maybe earn a couple more coins at the same time. But what I do have is more of a question than any kind of a story is that I've noticed that in the office, I'm having a little bit of a hard time detecting people that are less confused. And I guess I'm not asking the right questions, and I'm trying to figure out, how to filter that out. And I'll give this as an example, actually. This is good. I was in an elevator, and a Black female came in the elevator with me, and I had never seen her before. And there are two elevator banks to switch to go to another elevator. Upon seeing her, I said, greeted her, hi, how are you doing? And I literally said it. I said, we don't really see that many of us in the office. Good to see you. And she said, likewise. We proceeded to share information, what department she works in. And I'm basically gathering information to see what her role is and maybe if she can help me in my position, maybe I can help her, anything of the sort. I think just basic sharing information, what so-called whites do, basically. As I begin to switch to go to the next elevator bank to go to my office downstairs, she was going in the same direction. And I clicked on the floor, and she was going in the same floor. And the same elevator opened, and we proceeded to the next elevator bank, now going to the next floor. And then she turns to me in a really strange fashion and said, are you following me? I mean, like, are you trying to follow me? And I completely, I think she saw the expression on my face of, kind of shock and kind of, I was kind of weirded out. And I just said no in a very awkward fashion, looking at her. And I didn't say anything else until we got off the floor and just said goodbye. And I don't interact with her at all after that. I felt very... I was just a little bit scared because it's very easy as a so-called Black male to be called out for harassment. And in that scenario, it seemed like she was already jumping to some kind of conclusion. And I was trying to get out of that elevator as soon as possible at that point. But that's an example of I was trying to figure out, what are the questions to ask that are mainly neutral? That would be beneficial so I would know how confused they are or how less confused they are and who I'm dealing with. And it means that we could even assist each other on the plantation, that is my question. I'll mute my line. Thank you for the time.
Much obliged. My response, and other people can answer this question as well as Stacy's question about whether or not she should voice her disapproval of the twerking workshop for the upcoming Black History Month. But my response would be, I would not encourage non-white people to necessarily seek out non-white people to find out if they are less confused about racism. I would say that you should just function as if every single non-white person on the job is, you know, extraordinarily confused as can be about racism. You should just start with that premise, and you're still courteous. I'm going to be courteous. I'm going to see if I can help them, if I can, and I'm going to see if we can have a harmonious relationship to the best that we can the whole time that we're here. But I am not going to assume that this person is informed about racism. The grandsister, Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, she was asked about how many non-white people she thinks have, you know, an accurate understanding of racism. And she said, not many. I think, unless I'm in error, I think it was less than 10% of black people. I think significantly less than 10%. I'm thinking even less than 5%. Like, it was real low. So you should be, unfortunately, the assumption should be that this person is not. Now, we still gonna have to work together and to try to get along constructively. I think that would be my suggestion, not to go in trying to ask questions about to try to see if they're less confused or not, because the situation that you described, that unfortunately could happen. That's the type of environment that racists have constructed, where it's easy for us to be suspicious of each other. It's easy for us to be distrustful, despite all of that brother and sister. That doesn't really stand up to a whole lot in the system of racism, white supremacy. That's, you know, part of why, you know, I do that on the program. But yeah, I would go in and try to be constructive. You speak to her on the elevator or him, whomever it is. You speak to the person. You try to be courteous. If we can, you know, work together in a harmonious manner, that's the goal. Share information. I help them. They help me if possible. That's great. But I certainly never think, oh, yeah, this person is not confused about it. Even if they, you know, whatever questions I come up with, if they give correct answers to me, that still wouldn't mean anything, because we're in a system of racism, white supremacy. It's so easy for white people to compromise other non-white people that, you know, I just think, what do I say on the program all the time? Every single time that you open your mouth to speak to another person on the job, you speak. You conduct yourself as if everybody, past, present, future, who is affiliated with that organization is listening to your conversation, whether it's being recorded, whether that non-white person has the spiffy new recorder in their pocket, USB type, and they're going to take it to a white person as soon as that conversation ends. That's the way that I've encouraged people to think on the job, not to try to probe to find out who the, you know, less confused people are. I'll pause there. Hopefully that is logical in responding to your question. As I said, other people can give their response as we proceed. Other folks we've not heard from, if you have commentary or you want to respond to any of the questions or commentary that's been shared, go for it.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am. Drop the mania.
Yes. Hi, guests and callers. And I just wanted to call in about some workplace racism. And I went to a workshop on, I think it was Tuesday. And the facilitator, the coordinator of the workshop, she's a suspected racist. And she, as she did, the workshop was on rap, which is supposed to be about wellness recovery. And I wanted to mail some information off to you, Gus, because this information could help some, you know, us, because it's a rap for work. So, you know, it may be beneficial to some of the callers, and, you know, you might be able to use it. So I would like to pass it on. So if you wouldn't mind giving me your information, I can mail it off to you, because it's a packet and it's different questions that you may be able to ask, you know, it's basically for your mental health on work, at work and things like that. So it's like an action program. So.
Do you mean like a email or like a snail mail?
No, like a physical, like I have a packet that I'm
okay.
Mail to you.
Okay, I got you. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Took me a while to get. Okay. Will do. I will have to drop you an email.
Okay. And I can, I have your email. It's until justice.com. Am I correct?
yes, ma'am.
Okay, so I'll email you.
Untiljustice@gmail.com.
Right. Okay, so I'll email you, and then I'll, you know, we can just, you know, get down, exchange the information like that. But I thought that it could be helpful and useful to, some of the victims and, you know, at work, since this is workplace racism. Well, anyway, well, one of the comments that the coordinator made, she was referring to, she was telling her story, and she referred to the females as chicken heads. And so I just took like a note of it because, you know, they usually call chicken heads is usually a slang or a metaphor that they use for black females that are, you know, I'm not sure exactly what they're supposed to be, but I know it's not supposed to be a positive reference towards black females. But when she made that statement, I just took a mental note of it. So then she says that she's trying to recover from being a part of the good old boys club, and she's from Mississippi. Now, I said, at least she did admit that she is, she's basically admitting that she's a racist because she's from Mississippi. You know, she's, you know, supposed to be in recovery, but she says that she's trying to recover from being a part of the good old boys club because she's from Mississippi. And we all know the history of Mississippi. So that's was that situation at the workshop. Now, today, I have a temporary position. I still don't know what's going on with my unemployment, but I did get a little temporary position. It's part-time. It's kind of hard work or what have you on my back and things like that. It's like it's not something that I really wanted to get in, but it will help bring a little coins in to help me to pay my bills. So on this position today, there was a suspect, a female suspect, comes up to the counter, and she's trying to decide what she wants to eat. And this is the second time since I've been here since she's come into the lunchroom late, and most of the food is like gone. And she's trying to decide, basically, she wants somebody to like make something special for her or what have you. So she's like, it's like all dramatic. And I'm like, oh, I can't decide what I want. And blase. She's going through all the theatrics. I'm basically like really just not really paying her too much mind. But then she comes up to me. She said, oh, wait, don't tell me your name. She says, let me guess your name. So I was like, oh, boy, in my head, I was saying, oh, boy, here we go, right? So then she starts calling all these men. Now, I was codified because I was fine with her just going through the motions because I already know what it is. So she starts calling out all these names, Liz and this and that. And she even had the nerve to call out some men's names, Mike or something. So she's like all trying to guess my name. So I'm saying to myself, like, I'm like, you know what? They stay clowning on us, so. I'm like, wow. So I just let her go through the motions. And then after she like went through all these lists, like about 10 names, then I told her what my name was. I was just like, oh my God, just the triflingness of, you know, to me, it was just like, wow. Just, it was like more like an experiment to me because like, you know, how we talk about on the program, how, you know, with the name calling, how they'll call you all these different names. And she was acting like she was trying to figure out who I was. And it was just so phony and fake. I just thought it was like, and like I was laughing inside, but, you know, I stayed codified on the outside. And that's basically all I have, Gus, for my workplace racism. And thank you.
Much obliged. The tackiness, even that, trying to guess your name, and then she's going to throw in some male names. Roger, Michael, Gregory. I'm getting close. George. In my opinion, when you understand what, you know, is happening, that can really help you keep that cortisol level down, keep that stress level down. I'm not going to get upset. I'm not taking this personal. I'm just witnessing racism, white supremacy. I am being victimized, but I'm witnessing whites being white, as they say in Wisconsin. I was going to go to the other caller, but Stacy mentioned the book, and I think she said these folks are coming to her job. Like, they have all kinds of wackiness going down on her job. They had the great author of The Hate U Give come by the plantation. Remember that? And then the authors of Stay or Slay, that's what it is, Slay in Your Lane. It's Yomi Adegoke. Man, I know I've got to be messing up a name. I'm a victim. Forgive me. I am greatly retarded. It's Adegoke. And Elizabeth, I can do that one. Victim. I will just concede I cannot do the last name. UVIEBINENE. I would need somebody to give me a guess for what they think that is. Anyway, so these are the co-authors, Black Females, Slay in Your Name, the full title, The Black Girls Bible. Interesting, not black women, black girls. But there's an article from Vogue magazine. They're getting a lot of publicity, as Stacy said. This is supposed to be about black girls, as the title says, and what they're doing in the workplace. This is from the report in Vogue magazine. It says the book is an insight into the challenges black women face in every sphere of life. There are the usual suspects: work, health, education, money, and dating. There are also some touchy subjects such as the fetishization of black women. In one interview, the singer and presenter Jamila, she reveals that Robert De Niro once looked at her and told her he liked chocolate girls, expecting her to take this as a compliment. He said girls too. Additionally, it covers the media's representation of black women. While researching, I realized one of the most internationally visible black British women, Mel B, aka Scary Spice, was always in leopard print, always angry, her character perpetuating the stereotype of angry black women, not really women, kind of animals, if it's some scary leopard print anyway. And the microaggression experienced on a day-to-day basis, such as people who can't be bothered to pronounce what they deem to be difficult surnames. Gus T. Renegade, I'm a victim. They have very difficult surnames, and I was way challenged, victim of racism, but might be worth checking out. I would at least, if they were going to be in Seattle, I would at least check it out. There's certainly grounds to be suspicious if white people are happy in bringing these folks to your plantation. That is reason enough to be suspicious, but I would at least check it out. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you had commentary, if you wanted to respond to Stacy's question, do you bring up anything about the twerking or the other, excuse me, question the black male listener asked about, do you try to formulate questions to seek out which folks on your job, which non-white people on your job are less confused? If you want to respond to those questions or share your own situation, feel free. The number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Folks, we have missed completely. If you have a hand up, proceed.
Good evening. Can I be heard?
I heard both of you. We'll nab Red in Nevada first.
Hello. Thank you. And thank you to the other caller for letting me go. Hello to everyone. And just to respond to the questions, first with Stacy in the UK, I don't know if over there, they're experiencing white women are doing their whole Me Too thing, but maybe even maybe incorporating, well, you know, with all the different sexual harassment suits going on, I don't think that it would be a better, I don't think that it would be a good, maybe if you did want to say something, maybe along the lines of incorporating that and kind of maybe even they adding in the words, maybe subjectifying people, especially I'm assuming if non-white females are going to be involved in this whole twerk fiasco, maybe working in something like that, trying to reiterate Me Too and sexual harassment and all that nonsense that white women are saying that is affecting them now. To the question that the black male posed, I definitely assume that, like Gus said, you know, most black people are confused. You know, as you know, all of us are basically born confused because that's what the system perpetuates. But also just kind of letting people talk, maybe just what I try to do at least is if I see a racist situation happen, maybe even asking like open-ended questions, but removing all the race out of it. I feel like I remember Mr. Neely Fuller saying something about removing race out of the like a concern that you have, even if it is about racism, when you are addressing whites or even maybe around white people, even if you're speaking to a victim. So that's what I've done. And even then, I still am really conscious of what I say to victims. On my plantation, just to get to the situations, some of the situations that happen, there is a white woman who, if she has to talk to customers, she basically just says whatever. Recently, I have heard of black people, at least one black person being fired because they said that one other black person told me, you know, she was talking reckless. Basically, I guess, you know, she wasn't as nice or what have you as what the white people said she should have been. But observe this white woman, and everyone has observed this white woman basically talking to customers or giving out information, giving out wrong information or doing her job incorrectly. And just, it's, you know, no one, it's not, I don't know if it's really been addressed, but it seems like it hasn't because it keeps on happening. Well, a black female had brought up the fact that when she overheard this white woman saying something to a customer, the black female was like, well, when I was, you know, I was written up and, you know, written up into where if she would have did something wrong, she would have got fired. And she's like, you know what, I should file a discrimination suit. And I didn't say anything. I was just shocked that she used those words. But another thing is that I noticed with that whole situation, they used another victim to, of course, punish this black female about something that she had supposedly said. And just by the policies that she thought she was going by, she thought she didn't do anything wrong. Of course, I wasn't there to witness actually what went on, what she did actually say. The other thing is that, of course, my lovely interactions with white women, a white woman said that I look sexy the other day because of what I was wearing. Usually I try to, most of the stuff because of my weight or whatever has gone down, it's kind of a little baggy. I tried to dress up a little bit. Apparently that, you know, really shocked the suspected white supremacist. So now I know I'll go back to wearing my other stuff, even if it's a little bit baggy. That's all I'll share today. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I'll mute my line.
Racists are quite mindful. I think it's always good to get, be reminded of that, you know, they really are paying lots of attention to us. And lots of the time, it seems like it's very sexualized attention to us. I think it was, this wasn't the same white woman who had commented about you having the delicious lipstick before. Is this separate white woman?
Nope, separate white woman.
Yeah, see, that's, now you got multiple white women who are doing some ogling on the job, some sexual, not just the white gaze. It's a very sexualized glaring in my view. But that's good to keep in mind. Just, you know, we're not dressing. I think we've talked before about having a uniform for the job. These are things that you wear for the job. These are things that you do not wear for the job. This is not saying, you know, that you were wearing anything incorrect, but just I think it's always good just to have that in mind when we go to work in terms of what type of message we're trying to send and the folks that we're going to be around for this period of time. The male who yielded the floor to Red, much obliged.
Yes, good evening to everyone. To answer the questions that were posed, I agree with the male caller's question. I agree with your answer, Gus. And especially if you're in any close proximity to these non-white people or non-white black people, you will definitely understand, or you will definitely, I guess it will be revealed that whether or not, or it'll show itself how confused or not confused they are, or how confused they are. But I agree with Gus's answer to the most. And also I agree with Red from Nevada, her answer regarding the twerking thing. I think that's an excellent way to handle that. I just have a couple incidents that I wanted to share. So I work in the medical field, work with military personnel, and I had a so-called client that I was working with. And, you know, sometimes a white male client, maybe in his 40s, mid-40s, possibly, and we were talking for most of the time. I don't really chit-chat or have just chit-chat with white people, but, you know, every now and then I do. Anyway, he asked me where I was from. I told him from a city, and a city that's kind of known for violence, I guess, and particularly quote-unquote black-on-black violence. So I told him, and a lot of times I'm reluctant to even tell these white people that. Usually I'll just name a state and just leave it at that, and just leave it. They want to get general, I'll name a city, but not actually where I'm from. Anyway, I named the city, and he said, "Oh, wow, you made it out." So little practicing racism right there. Another example, my white supervisor was speaking to a non-white black male. This non-white black male is a very tall male, and not very tall. I'll say 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", 6'6"-ish, around that height, and pretty medium to a larger build. Anyway, he was speaking to this male, black male, and I'm walking by, I overheard him saying, he was quoting a line from a movie, which is known as a black movie, Friday After Next. So as I walked by, I heard him saying, "I am a boy. You are not in prison anymore, Damon." He was saying it to the non-white black male really loudly. And black male started laughing pretty loud. So for me, again, practicing racism. I don't know what the context behind that movie quote was, but I'm sure he was practicing racism with that. And another thing, as far as my code with speaking to my my white coworkers. I really tried to implement the code of always speaking, but I really have a hard time doing that. So my code with my white supervisor is I pass this office several times a day, and but I don't speak as I pass the office. I only speak if we cross paths, like we're walking and we cross paths, or we happen to see each other face to face, and then I'll speak. But otherwise, I don't speak. I know we can we adapt our code to fit our needs or whatever. But that's my code with that. And then my other white coworkers, I used to try to speak to them anytime I crossed their paths or we crossed paths. But I've gotten kind of fed up with them because, I don't know, I don't like their, their demeanor when I see them in the morning. And a lot of times I see that they're not even remotely interested in speaking back or saying good morning or whatever, good afternoon. So I kind of don't speak to them anymore. And I don't know. That's one of the things I have to really work on. Maybe I'll adjust it. It hasn't brought anything negative to me so far that I'm aware of, but who knows, maybe something could be brewing up. Something could happen soon, possibly some racist activity that'll affect me could happen soon. And that's all I have for now. Thanks for letting me share.
Context of white supremacy. Much obliged. I was cracking up laughing for a variety of reasons when you were giving your, kind of opening anecdote about people finding out, what part of the world you were born in and being like, oh, my goodness, you made it out. Like, I think Thomas in New York has said that he will sometimes play into that kind of racist Negro trauma fantasy that he'll just play into. Be like, oh, yeah, I was shot at when I was 3 years old. I was in the crib and they were shooting at me. But, yeah, I made it out. Show you my gunshot wounds one day. Just play it up all the way. And then with the Friday after next, I think that is at least the second time that the Friday film franchise has been referenced on workplace racism, where whites are coming in and quoting lines from the Friday films to black employees at work, which, that says quite a bit, in my view, in terms of the way that who's watching these films and what they think about black. But that's why I was saying to Stacey before, it's kind of like where you are already that Negro, to varying degrees, depending on, how much you have to say or what you don't say, that sort of thing. But you are already that individual. But I have to go back in the archives and kind of put those clips together, the different times that Friday has been referenced and what whites were saying to black people at practicing racism flagrantly every single time. How could you not be quoting Friday as a white person at work in that context? Other folks that dialed in, the number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. *61.
Hello?
If you would like to participate, that would be, that's one. I think she can bear witness if that's good old Chantel. Haven't you had an experience with suspected racist quoting from the Friday franchise on your job?
Yes, that has happened.
Ding. That's what I thought. Good to hear from you.
I've been trying to actually get in here for the past half hour, so I'm glad I'm in here. Okay. So I've been being more codified on my job. I am still currently at my job right now. The codification I've been doing recently is specifically dealing with Richard, white male, is listening to music. I spoke to my boss. She said, I told her it's very hard for me to concentrate. You guys have a lot of background noise. Are you guys planning on putting cubicle walls up? What are you doing? Is there a work from home option? She said, well, currently we're not a telecommunication company, so there isn't a work from home option. I was like, are you guys going to be putting cubicle walls up? She said, no, it's too expensive. I don't believe that. So I was like, okay, well, I need something so I'm able to concentrate. There's too many distractions around me. She's like, well, you could listen to music. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, so I can actually listen to music. She's like, yeah, just have the one headphone in one ear so that way when calls come in, because we have headsets, then I put it on the other ear. So far, I've started doing that for the past couple of days. And that's allowed me to, focus on my work as well as, walk Richard out of my view.
So.
Is he still being, so I would assume he's still practicing racism, in my view, by being distracting and talking to you about things that have nothing to do with work?
Yes, he has. And I had specifically told her that he doesn't talk to me about stuff that's work related. I said, she's a new director of technical service. She's the new manager. So basically I told her since he's gotten here to the job, he's been doing that. And she's like, oh, well, you know, it wouldn't hurt to give him a reminder. I mean, how many times do you have to tell somebody not to do that?
Like you giving him a reminder or her giving him a reminder? I think it would be much more impactful.
Me giving him a reminder.
Oh, see that? This person has already been like reprimanded verbally, repeatedly by Chantel's supervisors. This like has been going on for years. It seems like this person not following the rules and disrupting the workplace environment, doing it to other people as well. I would do this the same way that they do with us. This is, why are we wasting time? Like productivity, wasn't that what they were talking about, Jeff Bezos and Amazon? Efficiency, why are we wasting time with this? And it's like we're wasting lots of time because now we have to keep coming in here and having meetings every other month about this guy wasting time every day. Like, what are you serious? Like, we can't run a company where we can't stop one person from being distracting? Like, come on. That's why I said I would have been aggressive with this from the beginning. Like, as soon as it was brought up, bam, like, no, this has been going on for a long, long time. If he needs a reminder, it needs to be very firm. It needs to be something in writing. Like, he's had, so what did they give? So they talked about a soft warning. He's had like 20 soft warnings. Like, let's get something aggressive. Let's get something in writing that this behavior needs to desist immediately. Like, yeah, that would be my recommendation. But yeah, if the headphones are working and are blocking, grand. I'm a big fan of the, have you been doing any of the ignoring when he comes up and is talking about nonsense?
Yes. And I actually, she told me to directly, cause you know, they want you to directly tell the person. And then if they get to that hand, tell her. Well, I told her I've already directly told him. I mean, she said, well, wouldn't hurt to give him a reminder. Okay. So I gave him a reminder. I said to him, going forward, if it's not work related, please do not talk to me about anything that's not work related. You can talk about anything that's work related, that's fine. Now, his response to the situation, he kind of just looked at me like I had two heads. Like, in his mind, he's like, I don't care, I just do what I want to do. That kind of look. Okay, well, you do what you got to do, I do what I got to do. So, what has been happening is he tried to ask me something, I ignored him. I just told you the other day, did you not? But he doesn't care. So, I ignore him, so now I have my headphones, so he sees I have my headphones on, and I think he tried to ask me something, and I was like, yes, Richard, and it wasn't work-related. I was like, sorry, I got to get back to work. So I've been really vigilant trying to, you know, stay on it, and he seems very frustrated by the fact that he can't have that conversation with me. He's like huffing and puffing under his breath because he knows if he were to continue asking me, then I can go ahead and tell the director, because I already had the conversation with her about it, and I know he does not want me to go and tell her. So I'm handling that situation, but not only that, there was a meeting today with the developers. There is a white male on the job, and I'm just going to mention this. There is a white male on the job who works from home Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. I had a conversation with my boss about working from home. I said to her, as you have noticed, my work performance is actually a lot better when I work from home because I don't have a lot of distractions. Is this something that I can possibly have happen? I see that Chris is working from home Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. I said to her, is there any reason why he's working from home? So he started doing this 2 months ago. This is permanent. He works from home Tuesday through Thursday and comes to work Monday and Friday. He lives 35 minutes away. I asked her, why is he working from home? But you're saying I can't have that option. And she said to me, it's because it was in his contract with HR. I was like, what do you mean contract? And first of all, she's not even supposed to be discussing this with me. I'm not even getting to this manager. She's new. She basically told me, since the fact that he lives far away, I'm like, he's only 35 minutes. They made a negotiation with him to be able to work from home Tuesday through Thursday. She also told me something else, which she should have not also told me, because you're not supposed to do that. It's HR policy. She ended up, I don't know if she's lying to me, but she told me he's making less money than everybody on this work team. So she said, oh, if you're working from home, you get paid less. Is that true?
It could be. It could be not. You know, I do not believe that every single individual, especially that every white person who works from home, either, you know, one day a week or all the time or a substantial amount of time, I would find it hard to believe that, you know, all of them or even a substantial chunk of them are, you know, not getting the same type of compensation or somehow they make a little less money because they get that privilege. That might be the case for some, but I would be suspicious if that is a widespread practice for whites. Others can let me know if, you know, you have different information.
And I said to her, if I was in his position, I had to play devil's advocate. I said to her, what happens if I decide to move? I've been with you guys for what, almost 3 years now. What if I decide to move? I can't afford my rent at my place. I decide to move somewhere a little bit further away. Would I have that option? She's like, well, you would have to discuss it with HR to negotiate your contract.
That's okay. At least good to know, in my opinion, because before you might be under the impression, that's what I mean about getting extra information. You said this might have been information that she wasn't, maybe she shouldn't have told you or shouldn't have disclosed. That's why I say it's great to try to get additional information about the places in which we work, because even with that knowing, oh, this is a possibility, because for some employees, this is the case. They are able to work from home. So it's not that, you know, this is something that is totally outside of company policy. There's a certain procedure where sometimes this is an option. Good to know. I'll see if I can get that procedure. And, you know, maybe that can be something I can use. You want to be trying to do that as much as possible on the job, getting information about, you know, additional resources, particularly where they have made exceptions. Because if they've done it for one employee, you should be able to do it for another employee, especially if they have equally extenuating circumstances, as they say. I want to see if we can get to some of the other callers. If you want to share additional information, just give us a second. Make sure that we've nabbed everybody. Other folks who dialed in that we've not heard from at all, if you have a hand up, line should be open if you wanted to comment on your own situation or if you wanted to discuss what you've heard from other folks thus far, feel free. Greetings, Ivy.
Greetings, Gus, and greetings to all the callers on the line. It's taking me a little longer than usual to pull up my notes, but I got them. Thomas in New York, thank you for your kind words earlier to all of us about I'm looking forward to our commentary. I look forward to yours all the time. I want to mention something amazing that I heard from you recently on an older broadcast, but it's not related to workplace racism, so I'll maybe say that for Saturday. And I hope that, I think what the Codify software developer, what she said about the documentation in terms of your pay, I hope that that's an error. I hope that you discover that and they don't take that money from you. Thanks, Dr. Manning, for the package that you want to pass around to us. I appreciate that. And congrats on your temporary position that you have. You know, I know that you were talking about that you needed, and I hope that you get something more permanent and something that you I had a call. Well, Gus, would it take, you know, a while for you to tell me real quick what Stacey said about the twerking? If it will, I'll just go back and listen to the archive and deal with, and, you know, listen tomorrow or, you know, Just that portion. Hello, Bruce?
One more time, please.
Can I hear? Was anybody saying that Stacey asked a question about twerking?
Oh, yeah. The question, so Black History Month is next month across the water, and her job part in the celebration are going to have some sort of twerking festivity, and she was asking whether or not it would be worthwhile for her to speak up in opposition to this event for Black History Month. She was asking if she should do it and perhaps how to proceed if she does.
Oh boy! I'll take the other caller's word for it. That Red, you know, our resident expert gave her some expert advice, because I have no idea in terms of that. That's tough. But I'm sorry that you're going through the other things you're going through on your job as well, being falsely accused and all of that. And then when they find out that she didn't do anything, they don't, you know, want to acknowledge that. But you know, that's racist. As far as the person who I just mentioned, actually, Wade said to him something about you laid out, man, I think Thomas New York has great advice as well in terms of, you know, exaggerating the situation, but you can also just not give out any personal information at home, which is what I would do. Just you can deflect that and just ask another question like, what you would ask or something, and then when they tell you, just say, or something like that, and don't give any personal information. But I would say, white people are killing each other by nearly the thousands in California and Texas. So, I mean, by the hot 700-800 people. They don't got nothing on Chicago, New Orleans, wherever you want to, you know, mention. So you could, you know, say something like that, but you got to be real careful. I don't know if you want to say, you know, white people or something like that, but you, if you want. But if not, you can just keep that in your mind when they try to say things like that. As far as the Codify software developer, I actually have a question for you, and I'll ask you in a minute, but I'll say this. For the man who said, asking about to discern if his coworkers are more confused, I like Gus's advice and all of that, but I will say, what she did in terms of thinking you were following her, I don't think that that's indicative at all that she was more confused. At all. I think that was very reasonable, honestly, for her to assume that. You said she's never seen you before, and so I could understand her thinking, well, if he works in my exact apartment, which looks like that's exactly where he's going, because everywhere I turn, there he is, and he's going to every floor and every turn and every this and every that, is he following me? I would have thought the same thing. There's plenty of times when I've thought that, and she, you know, she's never seen you before. I mean, she doesn't know you. She doesn't have, I mean, I think that's only wise for anybody to, you know, watch your back. And when you see people just continuing to go in your direction, you know, if they're complete strangers, you have no reason to trust them. You shouldn't trust people that you don't know. You shouldn't assume that they're not going to mean you any harm or, you know, whatever the case may be. You have to protect yourself. You know, I find out every day that I'm more confused than I realize. So maybe that could be why I think that way. But I just don't think that was indicative of confusion at all. So for the Codify software developer, I just wanted to ask, are you no longer a software developer? Are you now like an architect? And that was it. I'll mute my line. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Gus.
Much obliged, Ivy. Let's see. I don't know. That seemed like a quick one. Software developer, did you want to answer that one quickly, or?
Sure. Good evening again. So I am a software analyst, which is in between a developer and an architect at my current plantation.
Analyst.
What'd you say, Gus?
Oh, I just said analyst.
Oh, I just wanted to quickly say congratulations to you, Codify software analyst, and I really wish you the best, and I hope that they don't overwork you and underpay you, but I know, you know, how they do, but I know that you are also very codified, and I know that you you'll probably, you know, figure out a way to navigate that best. You have great ideas all the time, but, you know, congratulations on that. Well deserved. And I'll mute my line.
Thank you.
Bravo. Bravo. Tempered celebration. Tempered celebration. Other folks that we've not heard from at all, if you have commentary you would like to share, line should be open. Proceed.
Hello, ma'am. Be heard.
Yes, ma'am. Greetings, Irene.
Hello, Gus. Hello, everybody. I apologize. I get nervous for some reason when I talk on the phone sometimes, so please pardon me. I'm still kind of getting used to the call-in setup. It was a couple things that quick. I taught a couple days this week, substituted, and there was an eighth grader, white male, using Photoshop. I'm a graphic designer, so he was using Photoshop for a project and making an image of a white man that I did not recognize, have like glowy eyes. If you can envision the scene from Ghostbusters where the gentleman becomes possessed after he visits Sigourney Weaver's apartment, that's basically what he was doing to his eyes. So the picture stood out to me. It wasn't like abnormal, but it was peculiar. And I said, who is this guy? He said, oh, this is Leon DeGrelle. I said, okay. And who is he? And he said, oh, he's the leader of the current leader of the Nazi party in Germany. I said, oh, okay. Well, what we're not going to do is make artwork or any other propaganda out of any Nazis or other white supremacists. And I'm going to report this. So you need to get that off the screen right away. So there was that. As far as the twerking situation at work, if it was me, I'd ask the people putting it together, since this is for Black History Month, how is this supposed to make Black people proud of themselves or their accomplishments, you know, in this country? How does that add to that? How does that add to their self-esteem? Otherwise, you know, involve the Me Too situation. I was trying to catch up on archives, and I heard, I think it's Rob, he moved from Milwaukee to California. Is that correct?
As I understand it, yes, ma'am.
Okay, so it is Rob. He mentioned something about the Koreans on his job being Black identified. I want to share with him, I listen to a lot of what they call K-pop, and a lot of the groups, that's what they do. They have a lot of premier artists like CL, Big Bang, so forth, so on, G-Dragon. They say the N-word sometimes, and they also rap a lot, and they're big into hip-hop and also reggae in Korea and Japan. Not saying that is correct behavior for them, but I do know what it's about a little bit. And then as far as the guy that's bothering the lady at work and she's wearing the headphones, I would also advise maybe an email, which would be annoying to the manager or the supervisor every time, you know, maybe at the end of the day or something. Today at XYZ time, he came up and asked me about this. And then today at this time and at this time, and then she gets an email like this every day. Hopefully that'll make them escalate to some other punitive measure. And then maybe even blind carbon copy after a while her supervisor if there's no answer and say, you know, so he can see it or she can see it, because, you know, he's going to keep trying. He's still in power to bother them, even though she found something to kind of tune him out. He's still going to try because he hasn't been punished. And I will mute my line. Thank you, everybody. Have a good night.
Much obliged. Caller in Louisiana area who certainly, I think, would concur take these storm warnings serious, folks in the Virginia and Carolina area. I don't want to assume. Do you concur?
Absolutely. And if you can, the sooner you can get out, the better. And please take all the supplies you can, because wherever you're going, and especially if you are Black, they're not going to be welcoming you with open arms.
Mm. Context of white supremacy. We did signature work on Hurricane Katrina. Absolutely. Other folks that we've not heard from at all, if you have a hand up, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Radiant Emmy, yes, ma'am.
Greetings, beautiful people. There was a couple things I wanted to respond to. For the person who their supervisor said that you could wear headphones. Actually, I don't even know if it's a supervisor or not, but apparently there's some, I suppose, white woman who said that you could wear your headphones. I'm not sure exactly who that was, but if you could get that in writing, I think that that would be helpful. You know, like just sending an email saying, hey, just to confirm, it's okay if I wear my headphones during whatever in-between calls, just as a protective measure. Maybe it was in writing and maybe I missed that, but if not, that might be helpful just because I feel like it's always an issue. There are so many stories where someone said something was okay and then someone above that person sees it and then it's not okay. And there's no record that such and such ever said it was okay. And I don't have any recollection of a time where a person said that something was okay and then backed me up where they was like, no, I told that person it was okay, even though it wasn't. So, or maybe it's already in your policy and procedure. But anyway, regarding Miss Stacy over in the UK, from the moment you were speaking, I felt really bad. And I feel like you're extremely stressed out. I don't know when the last day you've had a self-care day, just done you and took care of you. But that was like the one thing I really wanted to say to you. To make sure that you're taking care of yourself. I also feel, though, because at first when you had posed your question, my knee-jerk response was, nah, don't even say anything. But that's kind of my code, and that's primarily because I'm not anywhere where I want to be in terms of my career, my profession, and so I use my silence strategically so that I can maneuver. But as far as I understand, you are in your profession, like you are a professional. And I don't think that your silence would necessarily be the best thing for you in the environment. In which case, I would wonder, I'm just kind of curious, or if you know or don't know, who's in charge of developing the program for the Black History Month. So when I went through the series of questions in my mind, if this is a white woman, then handle it this way. And then if it is a non-white person, handling it in a different way. I don't think that the two situations would warrant the same reaction. I could be incorrect, but I don't think so. So the short answer is, if you think that not doing anything, you'll be okay with yourself on the inside and not feel stressful and not feel tense and not feel like you're doing something against yourself, then you ain't got to say nothing. But if you really feel like you feel a conviction about it, then I would say find out who's in charge of doing it. If this is a white person, I would recommend, I've seen this work for very, this is not to sound like a white person saying it, but articulate and eloquent non-white women write letters. And I was astounded how much they were able to get done by writing letters. It was like a thing. It was like, I'm about to write a letter. And things would happen when they wrote letters. And I feel like you might have that same kind of je ne sais quoi where you could write a letter. And in which case, if you did, like all the way at the top, excuse me, in that letter, you could sign it yourself, but you could also make it anonymous. I'm sure, well, hopefully, you're not the only non-white female. And I'm sure you could even write it in such a way that no one would know that you are non-white. Like, you don't have to say, I'm a non-white classified black female, and I feel some type of way about this. You could just call out the incorrectness of it from more of like a third person kind of stance. However, if this is a non-white person in charge of putting this on, perhaps maybe a different course where you speak with that person and try to come up with some type of resolution, or, and then, but also if it is a non-white person and they come around and say, well, twerking has its, you know, origins in the continent of Africa with, you know, the hips and all that kind of stuff, and they maintain that that's what they feel like they want to do, then VGQ, and there's nothing that you can do about it. And then by at least speaking, you've done something, if that makes you feel better on the inside, you know what I'm saying? But maybe that non-white person just isn't seeing it. And I do, you know, I struggle with this because I spend all of my life working in some capacity. Like, I practically don't actually have a life that doesn't involve some type of workplace. So I feel like if I am making any impact at all, it's in the workplace. And it's just a matter of how I can do that. So maybe having a conversation. And then, like, I guess the final overall thing about it is, if you are going to say something about it, then maybe having something that you would want to put in place of it, so that it's like, well, this isn't constructive, but perhaps this is, and I'm willing to put my energy to make this a good thing for the company and a good thing for other non-white people. And, you know, I know you know how to work that. But that's something that I was thinking about when I was thinking about your situation, the question that you posed. Let's see. You know, and I have a couple of little things I wanted to share before I start rambling and people stop listening. The first thing I want to say is, I'm always talking about exercising and taking care of your body, but I also want to talk about eating, that you have to eat. And I know, like, I like to eat, and even as much as I like to eat, sometimes I don't eat. And when I don't eat, I'm not my best. I'm hangry, and I'm irritable, and it's just not good. And so that's not constructive in my workplace. Number one, because I'm more likely to break code because I'm hungry, I'm irritable, and I'm having, like, an actual biological situation here. I also feel this way about the other non-white people. I don't feed white people. That's just not, no. But other non-white people, you don't know if they ate. So sometimes they're snappy and it's tense and stuff like that. So I always have snacks, and that's part of my code. I've mentioned it before, but it works. So I just wanted to throw that back out there. Make sure that you're eating and you keep snacks and food with you to make sure that you can stay level-headed and not, you know, be affected by not eating. And then... I'm in school. This is Emmy. I'm out here in the DMV area. So far, the storm is not too bad where I'm at. So that is what it is. But they canceled school. But anyway, long story short, I have crisis intervention training, and I got a trip. The semester starts. I email all my professors. I'm like, hey, so far I looked at the syllabus. Nothing is supposed to conflict with the dates that I'm gone. But if something should occur, will you please work with me, given that I've given you so much heads up notice? Everybody is like, yeah, totally. Thank you for letting me know. Everything is fine. The storm comes, but I don't even think it was the storm that did it. The professor decided to move one of the quizzes to now the day that I have my longest crisis intervention training, so I can't take the quiz. So I email him, very professional, but I'm gonna kick it to you. I was like, hey, as per our conversation, you've moved the quiz. So now it is falling on one of the days that I have to be in training. You know, I've been waiting on this training. I even included our previous email. Are you still going to work with me? I need to know. He sends the email out around like 10 something that morning that he moved the quiz. I email him at 11:20 a.m. So literally, like, as soon as I got out of my training or I got a break, I sent him that email. He didn't respond. 7:20 p.m. I still don't have a response. It's Monday. The quiz is Wednesday, and I have my training. Some things are going on. If I don't attend the training, the company is going to, I have to pay the company back for the training that they paid for. If he told me he wasn't going to work with me, I would pay the company back for the training and take my quiz, because that's my grade and that's how I can keep moving on. Like, I do have to keep a GPA at a certain place, but I need to know what you're going to do. So my sympathetic nervous system is ranking up. Like, I'm having stress because it's like, well, Tuesday, if you tell me I have to take the quiz before everybody else, I need to know if I need to pull an all-nighter to be ready for this thing or not. Tuesday comes, I go to sleep. I'm like, all right, I'm going to go to the gym. I said, don't look at the email because if he ain't responding, it's going to mess up your workout. So just work out and then you're going to deal with it. I worked out, looked at the email, he hadn't responded. Went to his office. I waited at his office 30, 45 minutes. He's not at his office. I made my way to the head chemistry department looking to see if he could tell, if someone could tell me if he had a class. He doesn't have any class. He may not even come on campus. He still hasn't responded to my email. I didn't send two. I sent the third one, exclamation point, da, 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 da. I need to know because I also need to give my job ahead. I like my job. Like, I don't want, and I'm working on maintaining the persona, image, mask, way or, you know, codified way that I am, and you're about to mess up my stuff and making it look like I'm just calling out, you know what I'm saying? It just don't look good. So anyway, nobody can help me. I send him an email. I say, hey, I've been to your office. I done left you two emails. I need you to let me know because I need to let my job know. So now I'm like, you're dealing now with my grades and my money. He waits hours, emails me, says, yes, fine, I did agree. Well, I'll work with you. Can you do this time or whatever? We correspond maybe once or twice. He completely drops the ball and does not confirm the last date and time of when I'm supposed to take this quiz. So now here's a storm. They didn't cancel class. I sent an email, said, okay, we had scheduled for Friday, but now there's no classes. So will we just agree that I will do it on Monday when class resumes? I haven't heard anything. So how I'm going to deal with it? Look, listen, I have everything in writing, okay? You try to play with me about my grade in this quiz, even though some people might look at it as quiz, all points matter when you're dealing with your GPA. I've already, like, I know exactly where the head of the chemistry department is. I'm already drafting my email, which I have every intention of sending after this semester ends, not before, but after. I'm going to write a very thorough, detailed survey of your performance because I think it's absolutely unacceptable to just drop the ball when it comes to email. Especially when you're dealing with people like, it's my job and my money and my grades. Like, all you need to do is let me know something. I shouldn't have to chase you down like this. And that's just completely unacceptable. So he's going to catch this fire either way. But as far as what I'm going to do about Monday, I'm not going to drive down to school. It's not necessarily dangerous yet because it hasn't gotten bad, but I'm not going to put myself in danger. You have not confirmed if you're going to be on campus. So Monday, we're going to do it the way I said we're going to do it. If not, I'm just going to go directly to the director of the department and be like, look, this is not, I can't work like this, especially because I'm taking a trip. So if he does this again, what I'm supposed to do on my vacation, be tripping, that's not going to work. So anyway, that's that. But and just bearing in mind, the way that I'm talking to you about it is not in no way, shape, or form how I would actually talk about this with, you know, him or the director of the department. The new job that I have, I can work in any of the hospitals in my region. I'm now crisis intervention trained, whatnot. So before, where I used to work with IDD, now I can work with people who are withdrawing, people who are having schizophrenic breaks, bipolar, manic, you know, all that kind of stuff, where they're just really, you know, not in the best mind frame. While we're going through all the training, a theme I've been noticing that so many of the, exclusively, I actually haven't run into a non-white male in this profession or, you know, this job title or whatever, all of them are classified black females, repeatedly talking about how they're being called niggers and nigger wenches and bitches and all that other type of stuff at their job. And any time of the training, we're never having like racial sensitivity training or anything. So these things are so urgent. They're coming up in trainings that have nothing to do with that. But this is when they made it to the office. So they're constantly talking about it. And so many times it's actually being redirected like, okay, well, this is CPR training, so I'm not really qualified to deal with that kind of, you know, issue. Make sure you take that to human resources. I've heard that a couple times. And then the last final official response was, well, you know, you let us know immediately and we'll make sure to get you out of that person because people can go into people's homes as well. We'll get you out of that situation and get them with someone that will work, you know, better for them. I'm not so sure. It's just something I wanted to mention, but that's part of the reason that I record. It has not happened to me yet, but I'm definitely ready when it does. I have my code and all that kind of stuff like prepared. What was interesting, however, is one woman brought it up and she was like, look, this is a big deal. You know what I'm saying? I'm getting called nigga all the time. And then another one was like, well, you know, I just don't even, it doesn't even faze me because, you know, I understand that, you know, they grew up, you know, years and years ago, and now it's like this century and things have changed. And so, you know, I really, at this point, I didn't have the same type of emotional responses I might have had. But what I did want to make sure that I did is just redirect the conversation right back to what we were supposed to be doing. Just because that completely trumped what the previous woman was saying and what she needed to have addressed, which was a legitimate concern about being harassed and terrorized on her job. And now this other non-white woman is seeking this white woman's validation. So let's just bring it back to the topic at hand and I'll, you know, figure out, because I see the other woman all the time and we had other trainings. So let's just not even go there. Maybe it was the best thing. I'm not so sure, but I was annoyed. So that's what I did. This will be the last thing that I want to say, because this is something I'm practicing. There's a dichotomy. There's how I really am, and there's how I am when I'm outside. And I just wanted to say for anyone who's doing that, to make sure that the mask or the codified behavior, the way that you're going to be when you're at work, that's something that you can maintain. So as you sculpt it, like, don't go so extreme that it's so easy for you to break and now you can't keep it up. So figure out how to have, like, not a foot in each side, but something that you can maintain so that you don't stress yourself out by making a code that you can't actually work with, or stress yourself up by making too many mistakes by not having a code. I don't know if that makes any sense. Hopefully it does, but I thank you all for listening.
Context of white supremacy. I suspect your professor will definitely use the storm to camouflage his racism and unprofessionalism at minimum. Just, you know, oh, it was so chaotic. We were, you know, getting flares and candles and batteries and milk and lost track of my email. I'm so sorry. And yeah, try and do better moving forward. That is my suspicion for how he will try to excuse his conduct in all of this. Definitely being prepared and alert for things on the job. In my view, I thought that was a great way to handle things, to redirect back to this person who's trying to get remedy for being harassed on the job. Not, well, this racist was just old. He's old and he was born and, you know, time period, and we need it. That's not the focus at all. Employee being harassed, that's what we're supposed to be. That's fantastic. A+ codification, in my opinion. And yeah, that's what we should be trying to do in the workplace. That is substantial. We're supposed to be talking about CPR, which is important. And the conversation is derailed because so many of us are being called nigger bitch on the job. Like, wow. Taryn, that is not bigotry. That is not discrimination. That is not hate. That is the system of white supremacy, white terrorism. That is not white ignorance at all, not by a long shot. Other folks that we've not heard from at all, person.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir, Mr. Steele. Just give me 1 second to make sure I read. We had a person who wrote in. They said, I have a non-white passing Hispanic coworker who operates as a suspected white supremacist. She is constantly calling black people dumb and is always undermining all the black employees. She is constantly accusing us of being confused and not knowing anything or how to do our job. The undermining is so bad she will bypass our work and our notes, come to us and explain to us what we already did. None of our work is incorrect or wrong. When she is mad about something, she will go through our work, look for a mistake, and complain that we don't know anything. She never finds any mistakes when she does this, but then she goes ahead and makes something up or blames us when she does something wrong. She will purposely withhold information from us and let the deadline pass for a project. Eventually, it comes back to bite her, but she will then come to us and accuse us of not knowing anything and causing her problems. She then complains about me and another black coworker to a group of white people who speak Spanish. Throughout the day, they will come to us and ask us if we are lost,
confused and why we keep making mistakes. If you look at our work, there aren't any mistakes. My white Spanish-speaking coworkers do very sloppy work, and it's noticeable. They keep attacking me and other black employees because their work is mediocre at best. I went on vacation for 2 weeks. My white Spanish-speaking coworker couldn't do her job and didn't want to do it, so when I came back, she made up the huge lie of me causing the delay in her completing her work. She complains about me to the supervisor. The supervisor calls me into a meeting and asked why I made all these mistakes. This white coworker hovered around and watched the meeting the whole time to make sure her plan worked. I asked my supervisor to pull up the evidence, and she doesn't. Instead, she accuses me of not listening and not understanding. I recorded the whole thing on my hidden recorder. I keep asking for the evidence, and she grew more frustrated. Instead of finding the evidence, she gives me a general rundown of what the company does and how I need to follow procedures. The question that I would ask, I mean, if we're doing that, that's fine. I always love a refresher about policy and procedure, but what procedures have I violated? And again, evidence of these violations. With these sort of problems, we've had people who talked about this before. As I've stated, you want to be a stickler about the rules. All of the accusations, exactly as was pointed out here, what exactly is the error? And even with that about productivity, I would raise that question as well. If the person, if this is what they're supposed to do, that's great. But I mean, if people are coming and are pointing out things that are not errors, and this is happening on a regular basis, or if other people, if this is not their job, if they're just complaining about errors, like productivity, we're wasting a lot of time here. If you can point out something specifically, where maybe it's a training issue, if we need to be retrained, let's get that done so we can move forward. Always a big advocate of requesting training in writing if you can. If you can point out a specific error that needs to be corrected, but yeah, if it's just people talking, I would either be doing a lot of ignoring and I would be doing a lot of being a stickler for the rules. Policy and procedure, what exactly is the nature or the explicit violation that needs to be corrected? Or if I'm getting a refresher course in policy and procedure, what is the exact nature of the violation? Give it to me specifically and evidence as was requested. That's what I would do on a regular basis. I think if you can stick to that pattern consistently and keep that recorder handy, bravo. Loving to hear more listeners being prepared and alert, being ready in case they have to defend themselves and taking notes and all that. So great job. Just be a stickler for the rules. That would be my recommendation. Thank you for your patience, Mr. Steele. Did you have commentary, sir?
Yeah. Earlier, did a caller say that they were planning out some sort of twerking celebration at their job?
Stacy in the UK said that Black History Month is in October over there, and that on her job, someone apparently, yes, they are putting together some sort of twerking festivity for Black History Month. And the question that she was raising was, is it worth the time and energy to oppose this event? And if she is to oppose it, then what would be the best way to go about stopping this event?
Okay, is this event being staged by racists or suspected racists, or is it being staged by victims?
We don't know.
Incredible. I think at the very minimum, notes and recordings of everybody discussed this situation needs to be taken, because that right there, to me, suggests that I don't know what the laws are in the United Kingdom, but that sounds like some sort of hostile work environment situation whereby just the sexual nature of the activity could be perceived as hostile. It just doesn't seem appropriate for the office. I think that anything that you can see on some sort of like for pay content on the internet, I don't think that should be and considered or even discussed as appropriate workplace activity. So I would recommend, at least at the very minimum, taking notes, making recordings of this being discussed, and get it on the record that you're that you don't support this by just communicating to, appealing to any sort of authority that you can just document that this happened. It may be in the form of an email, like I'm not sure if this celebration is appropriate for the workplace and it's making me uncomfortable. The fact that we're discussing it. That seems like something that in the United States, I think would be completely, just completely unacceptable to even bring up as an activity for a celebration of Black History Month. That just seems outrageous. And then what was the other question? Sorry.
We had a Black male listener who, did you want to add something, Stacey? Did we botch your question since he was responding to you?
Yeah. Thank you to you and to the other callers who have been responding on this, and in particular what Emma said, actually, because it's all of those dimensions that she mentioned have run through my mind, certainly in terms of who's involved. So just to give this a little bit more context, I've said before, I work in a political organisation, so I'm not working in a small office in a small company somewhere. And the context of this event is, yes, it's the organisation's Black History Month contribution, but it was said in the BAME network meeting, of which there are members of HR present. And as I said, the gender, you know, I just couldn't see for the gender activities that anybody would suggest a pole dancing workshop for any celebration of women and women's achievement. And in fact, they did do something very recently on women's achievement, and it was linked to the 100-year celebration of women securing the vote and all kinds of activities. So nothing so debases, you know, stripper culture. And I don't care whether you want to link it to African contemporary dance or not. And then the other point to make is that because it's a political organisation, the anything we're doing internally also links to wider, sort of more public campaigns on these issues. And for the BAME staff in the organisation, you know, the other hard issues on the table are Black staff being discriminated against, the BAME pay gap, and all kinds of other issues. But the people involved, the person who was presenting this was a Black male who is in the team that leads on diversity and inclusion. Ironically, there are two female directors who are suspected racists who head up that unit, but they report into a non-white male. Now, how much detail he might have at the moment, the sort of group director level, I don't know if he's got all the details of this, but usually by the time other staff get to hear about it, it's gone through some suspected racist manager, at least, and probably the directors. And so I would imagine that there's been conversation about this draft list of activities already, even if they did have a non-white person who put it forward for, maybe in all innocence. Just to give that bit context.
Yeah, this sounds like something that you should be documenting and that you should be CCing people and appealing to higher authorities about, because this seems like some really toxic discussion, and it doesn't foster an inclusive workplace, and I would definitely recommend that you probably take some action in that sort of direction, just for documentation.
Your volume is dropping a bit, Mr. Steele. Your volume is dropping. Just to make sure, I guess, you're speaking closely to the mic or raising your voice, maybe a little bit of both. The other question, it was a Black male caller, I think he asked, basically he was saying, are there questions, is there a procedure for parsing out which non-white employees are less confused is a procedure where you can figure out, you know, who is less confused on the job. That's what he was inquiring about.
Yeah, don't bother with that. I wouldn't bother with trying to decipher who is on your side and who isn't. I think it's called the United Independent Compensatory Code. So focus on the word independent in this instance when you're at work, when it comes to thwarting or undermining the system of white supremacy. So I would just consider all missions on the job as a solo affair. And I would operate just under the suspicion that anybody who is collecting a check from the bailing system that's being levied upon you at work, I would just assume that they are going to be more loyal to that check than they are going to be loyal to you. So I would definitely just assume that anybody on the job, be they
much obliged, Mr. Steele. Did we hang on 1 second, sir? Did we miss anybody? Are there any callers that we have not heard from at all during the broadcast?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Greetings, caller in Florida.
Yes, thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I wanted to start out with there was a video on diversity and inclusion training, and I think that we're going to be experiencing this at the workplace, at my workplace. And there was a term I wanted to share really quickly. It was called distance bias, and the white woman was saying an example of distance bias is if she's in a position of hiring someone, she is, more familiar with people who are closer to her, and it's just a bunch of confusion. She didn't really get into clearly explaining what that really meant, but she said that, I guess, many people have distance bias. But as far as the workplace, the first incident was the black female that I usually speak to. She was sharing another incident with me about when the warden, and she was going into an office of a younger white woman that no longer works with us. And the white woman came to her and said, you may want to watch your back, or you may want to watch out, because the warden, she said her name, but the warden just was telling me to watch you, and she's trying to get rid of you. So I guess she said this was like a year or two ago, because I guess she got one of her white friends fired. So she's been plotting against her, I guess. And she also shared with me that another white young woman made a comment about me, and it was if it was a couple of years ago, if it was 5 years ago, I would have caught him and we would have had a bunch of mixed babies. She said I would have caught him, meaning me. So I don't know what's meant by caught. So I thought about that. It does sound like a predator, that kind of language. And the next one was Usden talked about how you just don't have to participate. And at one time I was bringing in like food products and stuff, but I just got very confident and comfortable with just saying, I just want to announce that I'm not going to be participating in any of the food festivities or the potlucks.
And I said nothing against anyone. I guess this is how this formulated in my language. I just said nothing against anyone. I'm just no longer participating. And I had like a smile on my face, and it was very courteous. And I just said my own personal choice. And they pretty much didn't bother me about it too much, but there was one white woman who had asked me about it. And I just said, well, I'm just trying to be steadfast on my diet and sticking to it. And she didn't really say nothing else about it again. The next one was, I had a conversation with my supervisor about the racist joke, but the way that I did it, and I had recorded it too. I had mentioned how the people who get name changes in the sex operations and all that, they change their names up. And I said it can get very confusing as to how to address a particular person, whether it's a male or female. And I get conflicted and confused sometimes. And I end up calling a male or female either by addressing the guy as ma'am or the girl as sir. And she said she would bring that to the attention of the, I guess, quote unquote, higher ups. And then I mainly wanted to mention the joke. And I said, my second question is, and she just got back from vacation today. And I said, my second question is, there was this joke that a customer shared, and it was a sexual, and it was, I think it was an act of racism. And he said, what do you call a black woman with braces? And I said, I asked the person, what are you talking about? I was just trying to help you out. And I asked him what it was. And he said, Black and Decker, Pecker Wrecker. And she responded by saying, it sounds like that's something he does a lot or something. And she just said, you know, you have a right as an individual to deny service, to sever ties with the call or whatever, or you don't have to be subjugated to that. And I said, I thought about doing that, but I wanted to get feedback from her, the supervisor, because if I were to hang up or whatever, and a white person can call back and possibly compromise my job in some way, especially if the warden becomes involved. But she was saying, she used the term off color about 9 times. I played the conversation back, and she used that term about 8 to 9 times. And the way she was using it, she was saying, well, you have to be careful about the kind of comments that can be offensive and off color. And she would say it in different styles. I think about that word master. She was using some word mastery pretty much. And the reason I say that was, like, for instance, I asked a question. I asked, well, do you think this person did that? Do you think he thought I was a white person? Do you think that he thought I was classified as white? She says, she answers me with a question. Well, did you know his ethnicity? And now I knew she did this. And I said, he was a white male. And I named him first and last. And she turned over to type his name in. And she looked the name up and went to see that. Like, yep, he's a white male. And she was just saying, I don't know if he thought that I was white or not. But I think he possibly may have thought that I was white. Or even if he did, it was still an act of racism. Because I said, why is it that he felt so comfortable and at ease saying that to me? So I was really asking her some questions. And then she pretty much got into using this language where she was saying that, it depends on the levels of offensiveness. And she used an example of saying, well, what one person may think is a level 3 example of offensiveness me and you may think is level one. And now by the end of that, I was really trying to get more details on that, but she had something she had to get to. But that looked like that was some kind of a rhetoric that she, I think she had learned from these seminars. And I think they're going to try to introduce this kind of language to us in some kind of way. And that was my first, I guess, encounter with it. Because it definitely, I told her, I said, I don't know what those terms mean. So I asked, what do you mean about levels of offensiveness? You're saying a level three, level two, and level one. And she's saying, well, I don't really know. It depends on the individual. And I should have just followed up by saying, well, what is it? What is your individual definitions of level one, of example, interpretation of a level one offense, you know, being offended or whatever. And she kept using that word, and she ended it by saying, well, it depends on how the person feels and how to respond to it. So, yeah, she's been coached and studying how to speak about issues concerning racism, white supremacy. And I think we're going to be talking about this possibly on the job. And that was an update on that. And I'm going to try to get a definition for the term off color, that she kept using that term instead of racism. And that's all I have right now. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Well, how about that? The Florida courthouse, once again, that is for sure a white woman saying, if I had caught him a few years ago, or however it's phrased, caught, we would have had some mixed babies and saying that to you, like, wow, talk about me too. I mean, delectable Negro, that's a whole lot in that path. This was a white woman that said that in your presence, talking about you.
It was, the context was that I was having a workplace racism conversation with the black female who was in the child support department. And she stated to me that she, I guess, is attracted to me in some way or another, because I guess she may have just started a couple of weeks ago. So I go over there to talk to her. So I guess she must have noticed me in some kind of way. So I guess she was just reporting that to me, as though they may have had a conversation about me, I guess.
I see. Wow. Yikes. That's good information to know. Definitely be, take a lot of space in dealing with her. Be very cautious with her in the workplace. Definitely. Wow. That is dangerous. Every time. Good to have a code about that. The language of the warden and how they dealt with that. It would have been great to get her response on where do you rank in terms of level of offensiveness, Black and Decker, Pecker, Wrecker. Where does that fall on your personal scale of offensiveness? Just to see, is that a level one? Is that a level three? Just so I can, you know, get a gauge of what we're talking about here. But that, all of that, the rhetoric, that sounds exactly like the rhetoric I would expect racists that racists would encourage non-white people to use in the workplace. I always discourage, it's not about I'm offended about Black and Decker, Pecker, Wrecker. It's about that is an act of racism, white supremacy, or you can, you know, you don't have to call it that. You can say that this is subversive activity. If we were talking about an employee or what have you, any other language of a violation, you can even call this criminal activity in some cases, which it is, but it's not, I'm offended. Again, that's bringing this down to some sort of childish level that, you know, I'm offended. My feelings were hurt. I think you said, she said that. How did you feel? But that's not what we're talking about at all. We're talking about someone being engaged in totally incorrect and unacceptable behavior. That's what we're talking about. That's the type of language
I encourage us to use, not the language of, you know, my feelings are hurt, I was upset, I was offended, this is offensive, you know, hateful. That's not going to help solve the problem at all. All of that is, you know, just nonsense, not correct terms at all. But that'll be fascinating when it's time for, if there's a video or whatever the presentation is, that'll be fascinating to see if they explain all of this and the type of verbiage that's brought in, if they give definitions. That'll be great to get the update on how all of that, you know, goes down. Be looking forward. We have like 2 minutes. Is there anyone that we missed completely? I guess I'll do it that way. Did anybody that has a hand up that we've not heard from at all? Grand. I will assume that we got everybody. Was there anybody who just had a quick comment that they need to get in before we get ready to wrap things up? Is that Ivy?
Yes, sir. I want to say to the Codify software analyst, you are most welcome. I couldn't get my anybody unmuted fast enough. And I just wanted to say to Stacy real quick, on second thought, I definitely think that you should say something about it and go to powerful white people. And what Ken Steele said was excellent. And I think that maybe you should use the language unsafe, that you feel that it's unsafe, that you feel unsafe with this whole event, because it could spark some type of perception of just the women there dancing in a seductive way, and it could lead to predatory behavior. But just that you feel unsafe. I don't have a whole lot of time to say everything that I think you could say, but definitely say something to someone, to powerful white people, and try to put unsafe in there. I'm in my line. Thanks, Gus.
Definitely appreciate raising it as a safety issue. 30 seconds. Do we have a last comment? 30 seconds or less? Grand. We'll assume everyone is satisfied for the day. We will be here tomorrow. Pamela Evans Harris, Black Love is a Revolutionary Act. Recipe number 6. We are chugging right along through the text. We'll be here 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific tomorrow. Narrated, Cows Investors doing a brilliant, professional, outstanding job with the text. Looking forward to continuing the read. We'll be here Saturday, the compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Huge thanks to all the folks who chimed in, participated, wrote in, listened. I hope it was a constructive investment of your Thursday evening. Man, sobriety, even on the job, sobriety would be best. Stacy in the UK letting us know about the fruit flies as a result of beer guzzling on the job. Sobriety would be best. Especially if you're going to be in a vehicle, driver or passenger, let's do everything we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. Buckle up each and every time we are in a vehicle, sober and buckled up, recognizing that war is being waged against us. Take that seriously and modify our behavior accordingly. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other Black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cows signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.